rival nations are secretly developing weapons that could threaten the future of mankind. Deep in the jungle, an elite soldier must combine stealth with survival to infiltrate the enemy and stop a weapon of mass destruction from triggering the largest full-scale war the world has ever seen. Go behind enemy lines in this riveting story of peace, love, and war from award-winning director Hideo Kojima.
This is the Game Mavens podcast, where we mess around at the beginning and then just get serious talking about video games.
Yes.
I'm the host, the first to bring someone together, Joey Shinoguchiyo. And with me is, once again, George Kokoris of Microsoft Game Studio, right?
Yep, that's correct. Well, actually, we are Microsoft Studios now. We dropped the game.
Well, when did you drop the game to work on it?
I think this was, it was definitely this year at some point that the entire studio just, like, totally rebranded. The logo's been changed, and, you know, all the branding is, it's no longer Microsoft Game Studios, it's just Microsoft Studios, because it's supposed to be this more kind of, like, general transmedia kind of thing. It's like, oh, it's more than just games. It's all this other stuff, you know, most of which I'm not allowed to talk about. And
yes, NDAs.
Yeah, you know, it's all, like, secret stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, like, most of the top secret stuff that's not game-related isn't really anything that appeals to me personally, so I'm not, I'm not terribly invested in that. I'm the games guy, so it's whatever.
Well, as many great plans, to get disrupted, but then in any case, we'll still move on. Right now, this episode's topic is Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater.
Oh, yeah.
And then its updated release, Metal Gear Solid 3 Subsistence.
Optimus Prime, what are you still doing here? I'm assessing. Yeah, before we talk, yeah, you are at Microsoft Studio. Can you give us, like, as much as you can talk without and running into any NDAs or, like, getting, like, Microsoft ninjas, like, tapping at your window? Like, tell us how your experience has been over there so far.
It's been really good. I mean, I got hired there straight out of school. So, I'm part of the, I guess, you know, it's the college hires program, which is specifically for people that they hire straight out of school. Where, you know, I'm spending my first year there basically getting loaned out to different projects and different teams just so I can kind of work on as much stuff as possible before they decide where they want to keep me. Microsoft really, really takes the long view when it comes to their employees. They'll bring you through this, like, year-long introductory process just because they're planning to keep you working there for, like, 15 or 20 years. In the beginning, it's very kind of free-form, and it's actually surprisingly not as corporate as you'd expect. I mean, you know, like, there are cubicles, yes, but it's almost like, I mean, Microsoft Studios specifically, I can't speak for the rest of the company, but it doesn't really feel like working for an enormous company so much as, like, hundreds of little indie teams packed into one building and all being paid by the same person.
I see.
So it's kind of neat. I mean, I'm working on I'm working on Star Wars Connect right now, because that's kind of like the biggest, kind of hugest thing that we've got going on in the next couple of months. So I was just put on there like really, really late in the game. I'm just putting out design fires. It's exciting. It's cool. It's fun. Pretty much the ideal first job. So, hey, it's cool.
Rock.
Lightsaber on.
Yeah, you don't have to do that, fortunately.
Yeah, I know. Apparently it was like the guy at the E3 demonstration just said that because he was so like pumped to like present.
Yeah.
And he said it like, lightsaber on! Like some, like if there was an anime Star Wars, like a red hot, like fire brand, like Anakin Skywalker or something.
Yeah, he was doing the, it's funny actually, I was remarking on something like that with a friend of mine 2 days ago. We were playing Xenoblade. And remarking how hilarious it is that in anime and Japanese games, there's this like continuous trend of people yelling out the name of whatever it is that they're doing while yeah. they're doing it. You know, now like presumably when Goku does a fucking Kamehameha, he doesn't actually have to say the words Kamehameha. He just does because whatever fucking reason, I don't even know why. And Xenoblade does this a lot on the English language track, so of course we immediately switched it to Japanese, because if they're doing the same thing in Japanese, at least we can't understand it, so it's not as annoying. But I mean, it's this like constant thing. It's not like a flavor bark. It's literally just like that's the bark for every time the action happens, every single time. So after a while, it's like okay, I've heard you say breaking slash like 40 fucking times. I'm good.
That's almost like they could do like a Parappa spinoff. Oh, breaking God. Slash. Breaking slash.
Well, I mean, if they turned it into a
rhythm game, yeah, it'd be rocking. Yeah, so maybe you can give us a few minutes on a few, like maybe not minutes, but like a couple more words on Xenoblade. Like, you imported it, and just like apparently a lot of people are like soft-biting their Wii's and just importing the European version.
Well, and the thing is that we actually circumvented the whole soft-modding the Wii thing, because the Dolphin emulator has
yes.
absolutely no qualms about running a retail copy of Xenoblade at like 1920 by 1080. You can crank up the anti-aliasing. I mean, just max out everything that the emulator has to throw at it. There's a, like a little patch that you can load onto the disk image that fixes some audio desync, and it unlocks the frame rate and a bunch of other just kind of like fancy shit. And because the game doesn't use any motion controls whatsoever, the entire game is played with the classic controller. You can map the classic controller features of the emulator to a 360 controller, and the game is perfectly playable with just that. And that's how I've been playing it, and honestly, it is a really, really good game. I normally don't like JRPGs. The JRPGs that I've enjoyed specifically because they are weird and un-JRPG-like, being Earthbound, and Chrono Trigger, and Final Fantasy XII. And in its structure, Xenoblade is actually very similar to FF12. You've got a party of characters. You're controlling one of the characters, and you can choose whichever one you want to control directly, and then the others, you know, it's a little bit like the Gambit system in 12, where you can kind of set up like how you want them to behave while you're directly controlling that one character. And it's a gorgeous game also. I mean, it's just absolutely beautiful. The draw distance would be impressive on like a PC title, but this is like a fucking Wii game, so I don't know what the hell black magic they use to pull that off. And it's also surprisingly hard. I got my ass kicked in the first maybe 30 or 40 minutes, which is always exciting to me because I really hate how easy a lot of JRPGs are. And this one was, it was a little bit like my experience with Final Fantasy IV Heroes of Light on the DS, which is also a JRPG I like, where, you know, I went in and was like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. So this was like a little introductory fight where you just learn how to, oh my god, I'm dead. And it's not like the jokey kind of dead where, like, your character drops down and then he wakes up in his house and his mom's looking over and, you need to be more careful. No, it's like you die and it's a game over. You're like, shit, I have to start the game from the beginning again because I didn't even save yet. So yeah, it's really, really good. I have this feeling that based on all of these stellar reviews it's getting, I'm pretty sure that Xenoblade is going to sell really well in Europe, and then Nintendo of America is going to go, I guess those Project Rainfall guys were right. We should release this game in America. And then they're going to release it in America, and it's going to fucking bomb.
Yeah.
Because it's a JRPG on the Wii. And yes, there are like several thousand very, very dedicated fans who want that game to be localized, but once those people buy it, nobody else is going to buy it. So.
Yeah. You're talking about how it's like, yeah, really tough, like 12 and stuff, and like, but yeah, you're thinking like beyond that vocal crowd, like, is it gonna really outreach beyond the hardcore?
Right. Well, I mean, it's, you know, it's also that, you know, you have this kind of JRPG problem where you have the vast majority of the fan base for JRPGs likes JRPGs the way that they are, and if you try to do something weird that subverts a lot of the like kind of embedded systems. Like what Final Fantasy XII did, you get screwed because those people who should be embracing this new, this influx of creativity are instead going, "Ah, it's not a real JRPG," and then they just tell you that you're stupid. That happened with XII, and Xenoblade is a very similar game to XII, which is why I absolutely love it. But I know you're going to get a lot of the same reactions. People are going to come up to it and go, "Well, there's no." You know, it's just like an MMO, but it's single player. Ah, it's crap. And, you know, it's this weird, like, horrible self-fulfilling prophecy on Nintendo's part, where if they do release it in the States, it's going to do terribly. So I almost hope it doesn't.
Do you ever hear anything about Last Story? Like, I remember, like, around the time it was first come out, and then, like, the people at A4 Play were, like, going, like, this is, like, completely groundbreaking for JRPGs and all sorts of other stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've heard a lot of similar things about Last Story and also, Pandora's Tower, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
Because those are the three games that Operation Rainfall wanted to get localized. It was Xenoblade, Last Story, and Pandora's Tower. And I've heard very little about the other two games, but everything that I have heard suggests that they are also, taking a lot of creative risks. Really going out there and trying to do something different, which is always exciting to see, but it's also really depressing to see it inevitably get shot down by a fan base that kind of wants to keep things the way they are.
I wonder how it would have been if it wasn't exclusive to Wii.
That's the thing that's sad, and like especially playing the game on a PC. Playing it at an absurdly high resolution with all of the detail cranked up and the frame rate unlocked and all of this shit, the game would have been right at home on a console like the 360 or the PS3. I think it would have done just fine. You'd either have to A, turn the texture resolution up a little bit, or B, just leave it as is and play the Deadly Premonition, we don't give a shit card. which I love Deadly Premonition specifically because of that roughness, you know? You play that game, like, you know, because it was made to be it was made for the PS2 and then ported to the 360 at the last minute. You play the game and you get this, like, really clear impression of, like, you just imagine this conversation of somebody going, you know, now that we've gone up in screen resolution, all of our ground and water textures look really low res and terrible. We need to redo them, and then somebody somewhere just goes, "Nah, fuck it, tile that shit." I think Xenoblade would have done much better on a different console. But on the Wii, it's kind of screwed, which is too bad because it really is a fantastic game.
And there's like in this imaginary like pit in my head where it's like, oh, what if things like if things are perfect, they would happen like this. Like, I'll figure, well, maybe like Nintendo of America thinks it's too late for Wii, but when Wii U comes out, they'll refresh it for HD for the Wii U or something like that.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of rumors to that effect, and honestly, if Nintendo did that. Like, I know a lot of people would be really pissed off. Oh, you're just holding this back so you can sell us the new console. And blah, 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 capitalism, yabba, yabba, yabba. But ultimately, I think if they did that, I think it would be better for the game, ultimately. You know, because it's not dependent on anything that's specific to the Wii. And that's a game that really would benefit from a higher display resolution and, you know, slightly more powerful hardware. Because, I mean, they're able to get an incredible amount of content on the screen just with, you know, the sort of meager horsepower that the Wii has. But, I mean, on a more powerful system, when, like, even if all you did was just double the resolution of all the textures, that would, I mean, you wouldn't even have to do anything more than that, and it would be fantastic already. But, you know, it remains to be seen what Nintendo decides to do with that.
Did Konami ever release anything, like, awesome or whatever on the Wii?
Jesus. That's a good question.
Deca Sports was Hudson, but Hudson was probably practically owned by Konami anyway, so...
Yeah, I mean...
That's about it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that there's something that I'm overlooking, but simply the fact that nothing's coming to mind immediately is... That's a sign of... I mean, yeah, that's just an indication of how badly Nintendo dropped the ball with third parties on the Wii.
Yeah, we didn't even get a Metal Gear on the Wii.
Nope.
Nope. And we're barely scratching the possibility of MGS3 on the 3DS.
which still could be pretty rad, and I'm probably gonna buy it just because. I mean, hey, I can play MGS3 on the go now, so sweet.
Oh yeah. Oh, do you have a 3DS?
Yes, I do.
We totally need to trade friend codes, man.
yeah, totally. We need to do that.
Yeah. Let's turn that into like zero Miis, and then nothing else really happens on 3DS. We have more internet.
Yeah, it's fucking sweet, awesome. I was actually now that you mentioned that, I was thinking recently that as silly and kind of gimmicky as it is, I actually think the built-in pedometer on the 3DS is a pretty fantastic idea. Because, you know, it's this way of just kind of, you know, passively rewarding you for carrying this thing around with you.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, I mean, again, I think on principle, I do agree with a lot of the people who are saying that mobile consoles are kind of doomed by the existence of smartphones as it is. As much as I hate to say it, I do think that those people are right. But, you know, I still do appreciate... You know, hardware with like game specific features like the, you know, the 3DS pedometer and shit like that. I really wish there were more of that. But you know, I feel like that after the PS Vita, I think the time for that has passed.
Yeah, I think it seems like as much as people don't really people I guess in general like feel well, just me in general actually thinks that like this generation like. You don't really have to like jump that much farther. I mean, obviously, like there's always like you can always go higher, you know. But then like, it also feels like we're sort of hitting the plateau with terms of like the what games are being made with the tech and stuff, you know.
Yeah. Well, I saw an interview on Gamma Sutra last week with John Carmack, a man whom I've always idolized.
John Carmack of
id Software. Yes. And he said something very interesting that, like, I had suspected for a while, but it made me really happy to hear him say it. When they were developing id Tech 5, the engine for Rage, he said that, you know, they got to a point where he had to make a conscious decision whether he wanted to build an engine that was capable of displaying, like, way more detail than even Unreal and CryEngine and just, like, to completely outdo every engine on the planet. With as far as level of detail is concerned, or was he going to match everybody on level of detail and keep that completely consistent and make sure that the game always ran at 60 frames a second no matter what? And he opted for the second choice. Because, you know, I mean, because he was developing, you know, he was developing the engine for Rage on PC and consoles, and also developing a separate, kind of similar engine for Rage on the iPhone and the iPad. And he said, what's interesting is that if they did a lot of tests where they were trying to, you know, they were even contemplating, what if we got the game running at 120 frames per second? Would anybody notice the difference? And they did a lot of kind of anecdotal tests and realized that, like, a very, very small percentage of people, I mean, I think he said somewhere like less than 5% of the people that they tested with could actually tell the difference between 60 frames a second and 120. And those people were all pro gamers. So, you know, that's like an entirely different category. And the display density of the iPhone Retina display is so dense that, you know, unless you've got your face right up against it, you can't see pixels. So he's saying that at, like, with screen densities like the Retina display on the iPhone 4 and games running at 60 frames a second, I mean, that's kind of the physiological limit for how much display, I mean, for how much detail you can show in a game. Like, that's it. The moment you have something running at that pixel density at 60 frames a second, you've hit the limit. There's no point in going any further because nobody's going to be able to see it. I mean, you're literally at the biological limit of the human eye. which is pretty fucking rad, and yeah. You know, I'd had that thought with, I mean, especially with the iPhone before, but it made me really happy to see him saying that, because even though Unreal and Crytek have kind of taken the stage as far as engine licensing is concerned, I think when it comes to tech, I still think a lot of people are following Carmack's lead. Which is good, because he's the fucking man, and people should follow what he says.
Have you had any inside touch on Rage, like how that plays?
I haven't, but I mean, it's an id game, so I'm buying it day one.
It just hit iOS recently, right?
Yeah, actually, the iOS game was
it was like free for a while. I was like, what the hell? And I
it's been out for a while. They just made it free. I think it was last week. As part of a promotion, but it's been around for a while, and I mean obviously for a mobile OS there are a lot of shortcuts, the lighting's baked in and all that kind of stuff, but it looks really good, and Rage looks absolutely fantastic. It's really slick. It's an id game, so of course, you know, day and date that it hits the shelves, I'm picking up a copy, because I have been an id fanboy for, well, almost as long as I've been a Bungie fanboy, so effectively forever.
I like this, like George's thoughts, like the like a segment before we get into the proper talk, you know.
I'm sorry for all the rambling, dude.
No, it's awesome. Like, you're a really cool guy to talk to and stuff about this. So it'd be great to, I don't know if you're comfortable with it, like, get you on every episode, like ramble more or less, but yeah. Throw a topic and you just like go say your piece on it, yeah.
If nobody minds, I mean, I was having this conversation with a friend yesterday that it's like, it's really hard to justify, because I feel really like arrogant when I do it, but it's also just because, man, I'm so excited about this shit that I thought of it. Solid 3. It's fucking awesome. It's the best Metal Gear game.
Metal Gear Solid 3. Man, what was the first time, like, that I, like, found out Metal Gear Solid 3 existed? It was, like, Oh, I think it's always a... Because, you know, Hideo Kojima, ever since I made MGS2, like, everyone jokes about it now. He's like, this is the final Metal Gear that we... And, that means, like, all the questions are going to be answered. And that actually didn't happen with Metal Gear Solid 2, because then we were like... Because, what was it? Oh, yeah.
When did it happen?
Well, about 100 years ago.
What the hell?
Like, that happens, and then we're like, okay, so we're the Patriots and all that stuff. So, like, how are they still alive after 100 years?
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, I remember the announcement was, I mean, like, you know, seeing it first announced, I think the first thing I saw that was, it was a cover story in, was it Gamers Republic? Was the magazine? Which I remember, I think I used to really like that magazine, but, I mean, in any event, you know, they had the reveal, and, you know, they had Snake in the jungle, but then, you know, it was like, oh, it takes place during the Cold War, and I was like, wait a second, how the fuck old is Snake? And I remember they said all of that shit long before, like, they ever revealed that it was actually Big Boss, you know, so I'm sitting there, I'm like, what is this? Did they add fucking time travel to this shit?
Yeah,
like, what's going on?
That was the big Game Facts or whatever message board. Like, yeah, this is Snake, like, the VR mission going awry and stuff. Yeah. Which, after, you know, like, once again, we're getting ahead of ourselves, but after what happens with the rest of the series, it probably wouldn't have been out of the question to force Snake to... It hasn't happened a bit like that in Substance, too, like, with Metal Gear Solid 2 Substance. One of the scenarios was, VR missions go crazy, and then, like, alternate universe Solid the Snake tries to rule the world, or something like that.
Yeah.
Which was an excuse to get Snake to fight Solid the Snake without a sword.
Right.
Yeah, I remember, like, I forget what the first story I read was, but then, like, they were talking about the trailer, because I don't think the internet that I had was good enough back then to even watch friggin' trailers. Like, I don't think, it probably had, like, dial-up, like, or, like, DSL, but then, like, even that wasn't good enough for, like, watching, like, consistent, like, trailers. So then, like, I would read reports on, like, the very first trailer for MGS3 where, like, he tries to hold up a guy on the motorcycle, and he's like, what is this? It's like, what is it, Grand Theft Auto? I was like, no, it's a sneaking mission. Like, this
oh,
is no Vice
yeah,
City. Go
yeah.
eat some snakes in the jungle. Because he always does those jokes about other franchises, you know?
Yeah, that's right. I remember that. Wow, I had totally forgotten that until you mentioned it. Yeah.
But I wonder if that was the first trailer, because the first one I actually saw was a PS2 on the PS2 demo disc for OPM, where they had like a blue camo pattern, and it was it was the whole bit where it's like hungry for some snake, and how do you like it? Like raw, well done. We recommend solid. You decide. You're the eater.
Oh yeah.
Where it had like the black in black ink, like the symbols flying left and right from the jungle, like with against the camo pattern again. And he saw like a sort of an early model version of Snake, because he has a different face than he does in the final game. Like he's always opening his mouth up and down it's sort of like a goldfish to show that he's breathing.
Oh.
And they showed a bit of like a, and then I think it's the one where they premiered the Snake Eater theme song, because then like at the end they show like the slow motion, just like in the intro where they got the slow motion silhouettes of him like taking down the KGB soldiers with CQC.
Oh yeah, the all of those little animations that go with the title screen.
Yeah, and it's slow motion. She's like military advisor Horosada Mori. And like music composer Harry Gregson Williams. I think they did like also a like a title like title sequence production, like because it's I guess it's like some guy from Prologue Films or whatever it was, and then at the end it's like director Hideo Kojima. And then the stinger at the end after the title thing was a you know they see like him with the croc head and then jumps out of the the river and then makes that goldfish mouth gape again and then just starts shooting his gun at nothing. Da 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 da. Snake Eater.
Which I still think is like I think that's one of the best musical stabs ever recorded. I mean for a game, for a film, for a TV series, like for anything. Just that little sting.
Yeah.
I remember I went through the what was it? The secret theater with all
oh, yeah.
the like you know the weird like spooky cutscenes
timing,
and everything. And you know they end each one with that same musical stab, and one of them
had just enough of a gap before the stab actually played, that I was able to, like, I mean, I did this, like, you know, this was years ago, and I was using, like, Audio Hijack Pro and shit on my Mac. I finally managed to get just the stab by itself with nothing else in the background. And I had that as my text message alert for fucking years. Because it was fantastic. You know, you hear the same, and then, yeah, exactly. And on that tiny, like, phone speaker, you just barely hear.
That's perfect.
It was pretty awesome. I had that right up until the point that that I installed an IM client on my phone, at which point it would happen so often and so quickly that it just had to stop.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, basically.
See, the game came out 2004, so it was like, yeah, it came out 2004, sheesh. And then, like, 03 was, I guess that was, like, the only real, those couple trailers were, like, it. And, it was, like, 2004, like, the first trailer was E3, where we finally got a hint of the story. Well, it basically did say this, it was, like, the story was, like, he's, like, the Soviet scientist has come to defect because he's afraid of his own creations and what it's capable of if they actually use it. And they show that guy who looks like Kiyo Marv from the old Metal Gear 2 game. It turns out he's a different guy. He's like Sokolov, yeah. And then like people like got kind of mad at MGS2 for going off the rails with like Fortune and Fat Man and Vamp. But then we get freaking Volgan who's made of lightning.
Yeah.
If you haven't even seen the Cobra unit yet, and like we see Volgan, we're just like, dude, this guy. He's just punching the wall for no reason, and then like. And the end of that trailer, he's beating the shit out of Snake, yeah.
I mean, he did, there was one bit that I thought was kind of a clever use of his powers, was that he would, he did that thing where he put three bullets between his fingers.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that whenever he landed a punch, the sparks from his fists would set the bullets off and they all fired.
Yeah.
I thought that was, I mean, that showed some cleverness, at least, you know. But yeah, you know.
And,
the electric guy. I mean, I remember upon seeing the reveal before I finally warmed up to it. I, you know, the first thing that I thought was, Jesus, these are Mega Man villains.
Yeah.
These are the fucking robot masters here. What's going on?
Yeah.
Fireman, Lightning Man, Bee Man.
Yeah, we actually did get Hornet Man eventually with Mega Man 10, but yeah, was it 10 or 9? Anyway, yeah, with that trailer, we saw more of the supporting characters too, like. Like Eva, who was like the sort of the classic like the Bond girl, you know, even though she didn't, like, yeah, she like
yeah, they did girl. They played on a lot of they played on a lot of the James Bond kind of ideas, you know, riffing on a lot of that stuff. With I mean, like, you know, even the music, right?
Yep.
You know, the heavy use of trumpets from all of the you know, in the James Bond themes from the films. Having a Bond girl, you know, the whole idea of kind of glamming up the idea of being a super spy, you know, it had Ian Fleming written all over it, of course.
And then they also had there was a first glimpse of young Ocelot, which is what we call, like, yeah, because, you know, the Ocelot we know from the regular game, from the other games, is, like, you know, old. So not to call old Ocelot, but then, like, yeah, here we got young Ocelot with this first shot of his hand gesture. And Ocelot never lets his prey escape.
And Ocelot never lets its prey kill Dumbledore.
Exactly. This gun's like, Expelliarmus. It's like, nope, it just kills him. Like, shit. And he's, like, spinning his little, gun, like a revolver.
Yeah, he's twirling his gun. I mean, like, you know, you get that moment very early in the game where you get to see the origins of his obsession with revolvers when, you know, he's holding a regular semi-automatic pistol and it jams up. And, Big Boss, or Naked Snake at the time, yeah. Says to him, you know, maybe you should use a revolver because they don't jam. You know, little does he know that that sets up a whole bunch of fucking trouble later.
Yeah. God, you twist your elbow to absorb the recoil. That's more of a revolver technique. Something like that. Yeah. Some good shooting there. You're pretty good. Pretty good. He didn't say it like that, like with the grass, but yeah. And then we got the most important, who practically isn't a supporting character, just like the other main character is the boss, which, like, they kind of, like, I didn't even know what they were getting at, because after they played the whole, like, the MGS3, like, the Metal Gear theme, like, with the much more, like dramatic and, like, emotional, like, end at the end, because the original one just ended with a boom, but a boom, but then they actually did, like, a whole, I don't know how to describe it with the music, like, how the music went, but it just, like, they actually had an actual end to the theme, you know?
Yeah.
And then after that, but then, like, there's still a couple more minutes of the boss, like, giving Snake the talk about, like, loyalty to the end.
Right.
And what the heck, and I was like, yeah, what's she going on about?
Yeah, well, I mean, all of the promotion and marketing for Metal Gear Solid 3 was really interesting, because it was, I think it struck me as a little bit more kind of deliberately mysterious than most games, but I mean, especially compared to the previous MGS games. Because, I mean, yes, all of the promotion for Metal Gear Solid 2 only ever showed you Snake. You had no idea that, you know, you were going to be playing Raiden for much of the game. But at the very least, it was, you know, this is a Metal Gear game. Like, you know, you're going to be doing this, you're infiltrating stuff, and generally being very clear, at least about the stuff that, you know, that you actually knew about. You knew that, okay, these guys are the villains, and these guys are doing whatever. Everything about MGS3 was, it was a lot less, I guess it was a lot less distinct. There was a lot of vagueness. I mean, like, you know, I didn't even know who the boss was and what her relationship to Snake was, or to Big Boss, until I actually played the game. All I knew was, oh, she's some villain who has some weird relationship with, okay. And that was it. And that was all I knew. And you know, the only time that I actually found out what her role in the story was when I started playing and encountered her in-game for the first time.
You say, like, you felt like the marketing was more mysterious, but then, like, probably, like, at some point, like, our internet got better. Like, but before getting to that, like, talking about the marketing again, like, they didn't, like, talk too much about the story bits, but then, like, with the E3 trailer, because that was a full, I think it was, like, a full 8 minutes trailer, and they showed everything with, like, all the new gameplay mechanic they did for the combat. Like, you could get into, like a gun turret, and just, like, and they showed the Snake, like, mowing down soldiers, and, like, getting into massive gunfights with him, and, like, also the full capabilities of, like, because used to be just punch, kick, now you got CQC, you can hold a guy hostage and shoot, like, the enemy soldiers that are hesitating while you got another guy down there. Or you can just take the one guy down, just grab him by the face and just throw him hard enough to the ground that he knocks out with 5 stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then, they never, that was later with the other CQC move. But then, like, they also show, like, you're suddenly on the mountaintops and you're fighting, guys with flamethrowers, and then you're on the turret again, it's like an anti-aircraft gun, I guess, and then you're fighting guys, like, on those, like, they obviously don't, I don't know if they even exist in real life, probably not, but, like, those weird floating platforms with that UFO sound.
Yeah, the flying platforms. It's funny, actually, because those were, it's a little bit like, you remember how MGS2 had the Cypher drones?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because Cypher drones are real. I mean, I've seen them, you know, they're like, you know, they're just these big kind of circular things. They're about maybe 4.5-5 feet in diameter, and they just kind of buzz around and take pictures of shit. The flying platforms were, they had also been in development by the U.S. military during the Cold War. And the in-game models are based exactly on the prototypes that had been built. I don't know if any of them flew. I would imagine not. But, I mean, there were kind of, like, functioning prototypes of these things that, you know, they worked. It's just I don't know if they were... I don't know if they ever like took the risk of getting them more than like a couple of feet off the ground. They do exist. I think they're called like Howell Flying Platforms or Bell Flying Platforms. It was the name of the company that was doing the R&D, but I can't remember who it was.
And then after destroying like one of them or something like that, then you see like the friggin' Hind fly up, and he's like, "Oh shit, it's on now." And then it starts like unloading missiles all over the cliffs, all over like the mountainside, and he has to jump out and like fight with an RPG. And then like he shoots the first time and he misses, and then you see like his face, like he has like a like his facial expression like change, which obviously it doesn't happen in the final game because obviously I guess like different assets for the player model, and just to show it like just for the trailer, I guess, to show that part. But then like and then he shoots it with an RPG, and then like explodes like magnificently and stuff. Oh yeah, and they had to end the whole. And remember, like that was talking about like Halo's marketing like lines back in the Halo podcast, and now we got like survive to relive and like survive to live and all that stuff.
Yeah,
he jumps out with his M63 and like or his M62, and then he just like jumps out and after the flamethrower guys like flame him out of that little cabin, and then he starts shooting. He's like, ah!
Yeah, no, they. I mean, like, Konami likes to get really, they like to get really intense with their game trailers. I mean, I remember when I first saw the trailer for Zone of the Enders 2.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that trailer was almost as long as the fucking game, man. That was huge.
The one in the intro, like, you just boot up the game, and that full introduction is actually, like, the Tokyo Game Show trailer.
Yeah, exactly.
It's totally awesome.
Basically, yeah, I think. Shit, we don't have our attract mode done. What do we do? Fuck it. Throw in the TGS trailer. All right.
It's good enough for us. Really.
You know, which, I mean...
It'll spoil the entire story, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, which I can tell you from experience, having, you know, not just from working at Microsoft, but having worked at game companies and, you know, having worked on game projects myself, that's a thing that happens a lot. Because making a game involves so much fucking work that, you know, inevitably there's a point at which they're like, "Ah, shit, we don't have this thing done. What do we do? Ah, fuck it. Replace it with something barely adequate." Which is just, yeah, that's how a lot of that shit happens.
Before talking about the expanding one in the trailer, I was talking about how you said like the marketing is more mysterious, but then like it kind of broke down when they had the, what was it, back then they called it, now it's Gamescom, back then they called it Leipzig Games Convention or something,
right?
Like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was the Leipzig Games Convention.
Yeah, and it was the English language trailer for Metal Gear Solid 3, like kind of broke down in terms of how they were trying to like hide any bit of the story. And it kind of went on from there as well. There's also this incident, I think, around E3 where apparently someone just talked to like a casting guy, and I was like, "Yeah, can we get like a character sheet in MGS3?" And it's like, "Sure." And then like they sent them the character sheet with like the spoilers for the entire game, and then like that leaked. And then that was like a big deal on like MGS.org and stuff. It was kind of weird.
Damn, I never heard about that when that happened.
Yeah, and then like people have like they have archives of like a. Of that cast, of that character sheet, and it has everything there. Like back then, people knew about like the philosophers, like months before the game was out.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, actually, I didn't find out about that at the time. You know, just later on, like closer to release, I found out stuff out, and I was denying it because I was like, "Oh come on, Kojima could do better than this."
Damn.
Yeah, but then like yeah, again like that Leipzig trailer, like it's like we hear like the English voices for the first time. We got Lori Allen as the boss, like the news lady from Family Guy, which she's all right, I guess.
I never even made that connection. I didn't realize that was the voice that she'd done.
And funny thing, funny aside, like Richard McGonagall, his name is, Richard McGonagall, who is Victor Goddamn Sullivan from Uncharted. He's the voice of the U.S. president.
Oh, really? That's fucking awesome.
What if we can't prove our innocence? God damn it.
Victor Goddamn Sullivan for president. Fuck yeah. Man, I need to make that bumper sticker. Victor Goddamn Sullivan 2012.
Yeah, he's the voice there, and it was the first time we heard David Hayter's take on Naked Snake, which it started. I don't know if he was intentionally but then started to sound a bit like. Remember we mentioned in the last MGS2 podcast where it sounded like he was starting to do an affected voice, trying to play as a character instead of reading as an actor, reading the lines, just trying to play as a character.
Yeah.
But then it gets kind of. And then you hear bits of it, it's like, why'd you defect? Or something. Or boss. That point where the Japanese version, Akiwatsuka's Wolsa! It was screaming for him, and he just, in the English version, he's just boss!
Yeah.
I was like,
Well, because, with anything like that, especially with, playing any kind of character like that, you eventually get to a point where the character is so recognizable that the actor ends up having to just instead of acting as though this were a real person, in whatever it is the situation that they're trying to act, they instead just stick with the sort of known qualities of this character. So, so they end up inadvertently caricaturing themselves, which, incidentally, that's what happened to Christian Bale in the Batman movies. you watch the early bits of Batman Begins, whenever he is Batman, he's doing just this kind of raspy stage whisper. it's a bit of a David Hayter voice, speaking in a lower register with a little bit of a rasp in the back of the throat, and that's about it. But then over time, it turns into this ridiculous fucking thing, and by the end of it, he's going, "Swear to me."
Yeah, he's throughout Batman Begins, he sounds pretty all right, but then with Dark Knight, he goes there's a line where he's the one where he's talking to Harvey Dent. "You are the symbol of hope that I can never be. Your stance against organized crime is the first legitimate way of flight in Gotham in decades."
all the way to the end when he's having this kind of the philosophical heart to heart with the Joker. You can't, even though he is trying to be articulate and he's trying to communicate effectively a collection of philosophical ideals. You can't even take him seriously because it's all coming out like this.
Or you can't really make it out. I had to use Joker's lines as context clues. When he says, "You'll be in a padded cell forever," he says, "You'll be in a padded cell forever. Maybe we could share one." And I was like, oh, he's talking about cells.
Yeah, exactly. And all of that comes out of, Christian Bale plays the character a certain way, and then that becomes the way the character is known, so that when he plays the character again, he ends up imitating these things that people know about the character.
Yeah.
And it seemed that, David Hayter seemed to be kind of on the cusp of doing that with Snake.
And I can't continue without doing this little bit here. "You either die a hero, or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain. I can do both of those things, because I'm not a hero."
Lol.
I'm sorry about that.
Well, it's funny that that's a line from Batman, but you'd think it kind of applies to Big Boss, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Sort of. You get a bit of that from Peace Walker, yeah, but we're getting ahead of there. And speaking of spoilers, for MGS3, right in that trailer, that scene where they meet at the bridge, and not all that dialogue from the trailer is at that scene. So if you play the final game, you're a bit confused. like, because it seems out of place, because she says, like, I'm defecting to the Soviet Union.
Why'd you defect?
I didn't. And you're like...
Yeah, because they took the dialogue from those two scenes and just mashed them up next to each other. And you're like, wait, what?
Yeah.
I'm defecting. Why? I'm not. okay.
Yeah.
Sure, whatever you say there, buddy.
There's a cool bit there. They didn't really show much, because they didn't show the Cobra unit until the next trailer in Tokyo Game Show, but then, the stinger at there's not like it wasn't like a totally massive trailer. It was just like we're debuting the English voices, and here's another trailer with awesome stuff. And it was like at the end, it's like, who are the Patriots? And like the password is, who are the Patriots? And Lolilulelo.
Lolilulelo. Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then another more fuel to the time travel fire theory fire.
Yeah. Oh God.
I always thought that was cool. Like the who are the Patriots? And Lolilulelo, like sneaking that in. Like, because, you know, again, like, in a sense, Kojima, like, wasn't one of those, like, it's impossible to, in making games, to have, like, a master plan of, like, a canon, you know? Because no one really expects games. If you do that, then you're not spending your time making the game, and then the game sucks, and you never actually put all that shit into practice, so, you know.
Well, I mean, yeah, the thing that's funny is that, of course, now that's changed so much, because with most publishers, and this is true at Microsoft, this is also true at Activision and EA. I know it's especially true at Activision because I have friends who are working at several studios whose next projects are being published by Activision. And in a lot of cases, they won't even consider publishing your game unless you have like a big ass fucking transmedia plan to turn the thing into a giant fucking franchise.
Mm.
You know, like, it. In other words, if you can't go to, like, Activision or EA and just pitch a game, they won't take it. They won't want to hear about it.
They need the game, the animated feature, the comic, the potential for a movie franchise.
What you have to do is you have to have plans for games, movies, comics, action figures, like, any kind of licensing, like, the entirety of the franchise, and you got to come in with the full design doc for the first game and plans for, like, you know, parts 2 and 3. Like, you gotta come in with a trilogy in mind. Which I think is horribly stupid and damaging to creativity, but, I mean, what the fuck do I know? you know, and I feel like, you know, that's kind of become the trend because that's how all successful games have progressed now. You know, Metal Gear was successful and it became a franchise. Mario was successful, it became a franchise. Final Fantasy wasn't even supposed to be successful. It was supposed to be like the last shit that Square squeezed out before they went out of business. And that turned into the biggest goddamn franchise, like, next to Dragon Quest. You know, it's enormous.
Mm.
And, you know, the same is true with Metal Gear.
Well, I doubt, like that would have helped Mirror's Edge. It still would have been nice to see like some sort of anime for it, because you know, with the stark visual style and like see how people would adapt it, you know.
No, it could have worked. I mean, I could definitely see. I mean, like, you know, even if it were the same style and the same the same animators as the
cutscenes,
the 2D cutscenes. Yeah, uh-huh. You know, it would have worked. I mean, you know, every once in a while I hear these, like, random kind of spurts of rumor of the fact that DICE is contemplating doing a Mirror's Edge 2 with their new engine, which would be nice, but I'm not holding my breath.
After that trailer, then, I think it wasn't even the TGS yet, and then the trailer, like, the demo came out, which is basically the first chapter of the game, up to, like, you don't even see the cutscenes afterward. Which leads into like it's totally like, and again, like, you're talking about the MGS3B and then the style of a Bond, like an Ian Fleming, like a 007 tale. Like, this is like the demo is basically the entire first part of the game before whatever tumbles downward or dies, and then we hit the cut to the opening theme song with like opening credits.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that demo having like massive problem with loading on like regular SPS2s. Because you would press select hit the radio, or like press start to hit the menu, and then it would stop for like a full like 3 seconds or something like that.
Oh wow!
Yeah, but that was only for the OPM demo, actually. If you got, like, the jam pack, like, the, like, you know, the branded, like...
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And then they streamlined it for, on that version.
Okay.
Yeah, but on the OPM demo, that was, like just the, that was the only notable thing I wanted to say. But then, like, also, that was the first time I played... it's, like the first time I consciously... Because, you know, this is me and, what, like, junior high, high school. And this is me, after playing Shinobi and finding out I had Japanese voices, so I played Shinobi again in Japanese completely, even though that game is hard as hell.
Right.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, having the total anime kick, and I was like, oh, these are the guys that voice MGS in Japan, and it sounds totally awesome. It's like Liquid Snake is Major Zero. This is Major Tom. That's kind of funny.
Oh, yeah.
Banjo Ginga, yeah, was the voice of Major Tom, which was that space oddity gag.
Yeah, well, I remember when that moment came and he said just call me Major Tom. I lost it. That was good. I actually didn't play the demo of MGS3. Bought the game sight unseen because it was a game about survival in the jungle. Which was just automatically like, yep, that's awesome. Buying that shit.
Did any thought of MGS2 go into that? Like you weren't. It wasn't. You knew this was like the sequel to MGS. I mean, in the same series as MGS, right?
Yeah.
So and this is a different anime.
I had liked the first game, and the second game, I had had fun with it. I mean, yeah, of course the wheels came off at the end, but I mean, you know, whatever. The wheels were supposed to come off because it was like it's just this giant fucking practical joke. So, you know, I was okay with it. I was not as bothered by the insanity of MGS2's third act as I think most people were. So I was just like, ah, sweet, another weird-ass, crazy fucking Metal Gear game. I'm all about this.
Yeah, it was pretty, it's pretty, anyway. Do you see Rango?
No, I haven't. I want to, though.
You need to watch Rango.
I've heard really good things about it. I just haven't I haven't gotten around to seeing it. I was excited just by the fucking Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas reference in the poster.
There is? What is it?
Oh, well, it's just the shape of the character's head on the poster is exactly the same as the shape of Johnny Depp's distorted face on the poster for Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
They have a reference to that in Rango itself as well.
Awesome. Okay, yeah, I definitely want to see it.
Nab the Blu-ray. It comes with a DVD version.
Oh, awesome.
And digital copy, yeah. For a second there, it was like $8, and then initial $5 of savings on Amazon. I was like, oh, shit, Instabot. I was like...
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so it'll probably hit super low prices again on Amazon. Just keep your eye open.
Cool.
Tokyo Game Show trailer was totally awesome.
Yeah, and that was the huge one, right?
Yeah, that was the last big one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was shorter in time, sort of, because it was time to the theme song, not Snake Eater, the instrumental Harry Gregson Williams did a new twist on the main theme.
That's right. Yeah.
And we heard it before, the year before with the trailer then, but then with this one, they show a whole bunch of the cutscenes, after Snake is wounded and he's putting himself back together, he has to twist his arm back, it's broken, he has to twist it back, and he's like, and all that stuff, and you hear him talking with Major's like the boss is your enemy now, you have to kill her. No, she's my mentor. How can you tell me to do that? All that stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of the dialogue was again cut from later parts of the game. And it wasn't as confusing this time, because it did seem inevitably stuff that would inevitably be at the end of the game. It still was really cool to see. And then, you saw that mirror shot where he's in, the black version of the Sigi suit, the boss is in the white one, and they're in that flower field.
Right, right.
And that's when they introduced, and then she's like, Gru and my sons are waiting up ahead. Face me. And then that's when she shows, like, they finally introduced the Cobra unit officially.
Yeah, yeah, that was, yeah, and then, you know, there was that, I don't know if it was that trailer, if I'm just imagining it, but there was the point where, you know, you just saw this, like, really quick succession of all of the members of the Cobra unit.
I think that was in the Subsistence trailer, but in a bit like that was like quick cuts. But yeah, you're right in the sense that it's like when the pain is like, we are the sons of the boss, and it's like, yeah, and then the fury is like, yeah, he says his bit, and then like the fear, and then the sorrow, and then you don't get a sense of the sorrow, which it makes sense, but then like the end, and then they show the end, and his parrot, and then you see his. And then when he puts his eye to the scope, his eye bugs out, and you're like, whoa, this old dude.
Yeah, that's right. I remember seeing that.
And it's like a quiet, like, and it's like after that, there's like that quiet pause in the music, like the quiet lull in the tune. And that's when they introduce, like, his, like, the keeper of his, like, his jail cell is Johnny, like, the first, like, not the first Johnny, but, like, the first canonical, like, who chills with Snake, like, Johnny Sasaki.
Right.
It's like all the firstborn sons of my family are Johnny. He's like a clan of Johnnies. And that bit where it's like, why do we have to have a Cold War? And I guess a while ago, Ryan talked about like how they were translating and not like really localizing the text, because then he says like our country used to be such good friends, and it's like, well, I don't know about friends, but like allies. But then like there's a, but yeah, that line is like there's that line there.
Yeah.
And then Eva talking to Snake like, do you love anyone? And it's like, is there anyone you love? It's like, I've never been interested in anyone like that. What about the boss? And it's like, she's different.
Yeah.
It's like love or hate. You can't describe it. Like, can you really describe it with like that? It's like all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I think that was the first moment when, you know, he's like, he's making reference to this really complicated relationship that he has with this woman.
Yeah. And then she has a shot of Volgan like saying like this, like what do you call it? Like, we will reunite this world, East and West. And we will do that with the Cobra unit and the Shagahod. And the first time you see the Shagahod bust out of that place, and he goes like, "Mwah!"
Yeah.
And you're like, Jesus Christ.
Giant fucking screw-powered tank.
And it looks like, yeah, it's like dragging its jacket, his huge ass behind him.
Yeah.
And then what's the stinger for that trailer? God, I forgot.
I don't remember.
Oh, God, we're talking about stingers for trailers. We're forgetting the E3 one, where it's like, the Rykov guy. We don't know. It's like, you know, in the main story. But then like Volgan crotch grab.
That's right. Oh my god. Because they show him, and you know, you're immediately just like, oh fuck, Raiden is in this game. How the fuck does that work?
And he's like, Kurobara, Kurobara.
Yeah.
He pushes him away. He just grabs it again.
He's like, whoa, all right, what is this? What the fuck, man?
And then the very last shot was Ocelot juggling the three revolvers.
Yep. Fucking Kojima,
the stinger
man.
For MGS 3 Snake Eater, the last TGS trailer was, the title card was like, the boss is like, there's only room for one boss and one snake. And then Volgan pulls the snake, it's not over yet! And that's when he finally starts chasing, that's when they finally start chasing, getting the chasing going. Like, they first show the part, and then Rakov is like, I feel like someone, oh, no, the big thing was like, so, what was it, we have this extra important mission for you, Snake, and it's like, you can't tell, because if you never played, like, the Japanese versions, but that's, like, Colonel Campbell. It's like, so, what is, like, what's the target? Apes.
What? Oh, yeah,
it's like,
yeah, yeah.
Ape Escape.
The Ape Escape crossover.
Yeah.
And which was like, fucking rad.
And then you see, like, the one ape is, like, just smacking his butt at Snake. And Snake goes, get you! Which is, like, the Japanese version of gotcha.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because
the catchphrase, because the title, Ape Escape is called Saru Get You, which is, like, got the monkey or something like that.
Right, right.
And the very last shot was of a Rykov walking away, and he's like, I thought I just, never mind. And Colonel Campbell's like, you'll do it! Oh, great.
I remember loving that, because I've always appreciated the, you know, the sort of unmitigated silliness that, that, you know, kind of gets thrown haphazardly into the Metal Gear games. I mean, you know, it's like the, it's like the skateboarding minigame in Metal Gear Solid 2 Substance. It's just like, yes, that's exactly what this needs! I need to go skateboarding on Big Shell. Yep.
Exactly. This Big Shell is a giant skate rink.
Yep.
Exactly. And it went backwards as well. Like with Ape Escape 3, you got like a sort of all ages Metal Gear Solid, and you're playing as Ape Snake.
Yep.
God, you ever see like the magazine ad that featured the Ape Escape monkeys?
No.
And Snake was in the banana camo, and he was also smacking his butt at the camera.
Oh God, really?
I had to look that up and show it for you.
I never saw that.
Oh God. God damn. Another thing they had was like a cross promotion. Like I thought like Calorie Mate was actually like a thing from the 60s, but it's totally like a health food in real life in Japan right now.
Yeah.
And it was like a tie-in product, yeah.
Yeah, it was just product placement.
Yeah, did you ever eat Calorie Mate?
No, I have not.
I remember going with my friend to the Japanese supermarket just to buy that freaking Calorie Mate. That shit is dry as hell, man.
Really?
I had to drink water constantly just it was like biting into like they packed together flour flavoring, and then that was a cookie. And I bit and I was like, I had to grab a bottle of water just chug it down while I was eating Calorie Mate.
Jesus.
Yeah. Man. But yeah, like, it was not to say like it's a bad food stuff, but like like Snake must have been desperate amongst all those eating those Indian gavials and stuff to like chomp a calorie and be like, "My!"
Yeah, I've never eaten it, but I mean, yeah, I guess it doesn't surprise me that it would taste odd.
Yeah, and again, it is like a health food sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess all the hemming and hawing about the trailer and the demo is just talk about the game itself, huh?
Right on. Metal Gear Solid 3 was fucking good, man. Even for nothing else, for breaking the sort of established kind of series conventions of having everything be, you know, fairly rectilinear, you're in military bases, you're in like industrial complexes. You have, you know, lots of really clean right angles to hide around. Guards are generally moving in these patterns that are pretty much confined to the cardinal directions. They're moving north-south, they're moving east-west. They, you know, if they change direction, it's 90 degrees or 120 degrees. So it's fairly predictable. Then you're going from that to, fuck it, you're in the jungle. There's trees and shit. Very, very different. Having to like get down in the grass, or having to, if you have your back up against a tree, having to kind of sidle around the trunk of the tree as somebody walks past on the other side. Really fascinating subversion of the way the stealth mechanics have been built in the previous games.
And you have to people always like complain about like going into the menu to treat every injury or modifying your camo and stuff. But that always seemed kind of cool to me, having to actively make sure your camo index is like is on par to keep, like, to keep moving, right? Otherwise you forget, and then you get caught, and then you die.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like that, because it keeps the interface out of the way when you're actually playing. You know, when you're walking around the jungle, you're controlling Snake, you're moving around in the world, there's very little interface. And I like that. And, you know, I think having the player go into a menu in order to double-check things for themselves, I like that on principle, because it's, you know, it's encouraging the player to be more careful, to be more conscientious.
One thing, like, talking about, like, treating injuries, one thing I love to do, like, I found out that if you let a wound naturally heal, like, it extends your life bar, like, a certain difficulty.
Really?
Like a normal mode, I think you start with, like, the half the life bar you have on easy mode. On easy and very easy, you have, like, max life, like, from the start, you know?
Right.
Like, it's not like an MGS1, like, where if... Like, in MGS2, you had a consistent full life bar. Like, it never grew or anything. In MGS2, I'm talking about. Like, in MGS1, after every boss you beat, you got more life.
Yeah.
In MGS3, you have, like, a... Because you always have four stamina gauges, right? Like, that are, like, you know, four segments to one stamina bar. Like, that's, like, for keeping your hands steady, like, when you're holding a gun. And then for health, like, health is just health, you know?
Yeah.
Because, like, eating, like, taking life meds, like, injecting life meds was what healed your life. If you stood still, that would heal your life gradually and stuff. And then, like, incurring injuries would, like, put in those red blocks that would, like, stymie, like, having full health back. But you have to wait a while for it to naturally heal. Or it could speed up the process by, like, using all your health, like, using, like, the styptic, like, disinfectant, whatever, to heal your, like, to treat your injuries, you know?
Right.
But if you treated it to the last step and just left it alone, let it heal naturally, it extended your life bar back a little bit.
That's awesome. I did not know that.
And this funny thing is, like, you know, like, the first time you go into the, like, the, go, head to try and find Sokolov, but you run into Grunin instead, like, there's that, wide area where you eventually fight the fear when you backtrack.
Yeah.
All those spike logs everywhere. So if you run into, like, a spike log, you instantly get, like, an injury, like a cut. You have to, like, heal yourself, right?
Yeah.
So I would, like, heal myself to the last point, let it heal naturally, and my life bar would go up. I would run into the tree, run into the spike log again, do it over and over in that same night, that same place, until I got, like, the maximum health bar.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, that's funny, because, I mean, it's cool on two levels. It's cool because it's a, you know, it's an interesting touch on Kojima's part, you know, to have this kind of second layer to, you know, to the injury mechanic. Because, you know, I mean, you know, obviously, okay, yeah, you get hurt, and now you have to heal yourself. You don't just, like, pick up a health pack or whatever. Okay, that's cool. But, you know, the additional layer of getting a benefit for allowing the wounds to heal naturally. Like, not only is that more naturalistic, but it's also... It's interesting as a game mechanic because there's an additional risk-reward. If you put off the benefit of healing yourself, you get a greater benefit after a greater amount of time. But on top of that, then, you know, it leads to the, you know, to the scenario that you were in, where if you're trying to exploit that mechanic by injuring yourself and then healing yourself and then injuring yourself again and then healing yourself and basically kind of doing this repetition that eventually maxes out your life gauge, you're essentially doing what people do in real life to build stamina.
Hmm.
Which is, like, it's like a completely second layer of awesome. You know, I mean, I tend to sort of bristle at, you know, completely linear, cutscene-driven games now. You know, I think because I believe too strongly in the possibilities of breaking free from that restriction. So in a lot of ways, I disagree with a lot of the things that the MGS games do with their structure and their storytelling, but those little details are fucking genius.
When I found that out, that I was like, oh man, this is so awesome. And then at some point, like, I think I actually gamed over doing that because, like, I forgot to, like, wait for my health to heal completely, so I just kept getting injuries, and just, like, eventually, like, got so many injuries, like, I forgot, like, the health fluid just ran out, and I was like, oh shit.
Aww.
Yeah.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, there was a lot of, and there was a lot of like fun touches, like again with like the menu area where everyone knows the part where if you spin Snake around in the 3D viewer and then exit out, like Snake vomits. And it actually helps if you have like a poison, you don't have like antidote or stuff, and then you just like, and you just like cure yourself that way, you know.
Oh, just by spinning her out until you, yeah.
Vomit. If you vomit it out, like I think if you like, ate poison food, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, like using like the PS2 internal clock to like the whole thing where you know keep your food like in the cage and it'll stay alive. But if you have like old fruit or like you know you segment into like Indian gavial into like three packs of like large meat, but then like if you don't play for a while, you load it back up. If it was poisoned, I'm like poisoned and rotten. Yeah.
I love that. I mean, those in a lot of cases, making a game more naturalistic for the sake of being more naturalistic usually isn't that great an idea. You know, like when you do something and like, you know, we should put this in the game because this is what happens in real life. You know, when you do that, you can get yourself into a dead end. But I feel like Kojima's really good at choosing things that, you know, are more naturalistic than other games, but are still valuable as game mechanics. They're still worth putting in the game, and they're not just in there for the sake of being in there. You know, like the fact that in Metal Gear Solid 1 on the PS1, you know, smoking cigarettes would slowly deplete your life, but you could also blow the smoke into laser traps to see them. I mean, on the one hand, yeah, that's like a more naturalistic thing, because smoking kills you, haha, but it's also, you know, it adds a risk-reward to the game that, yeah, you can find out where these laser traps are, but you're going to take a health penalty to find out. And, you know, it's a neat way of kind of balancing those needs that the player has when they're controlling the character. But, you know, it just has the benefit of also being naturalistic and, you know, working in a way that no other game really operates.
MGS2 had, we mentioned last time, the like, you know, doing the pull-ups to increase your grip gauge.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like, in Tanker chapter, at some point, if you raise the grip level 3, then Otacon congratulates you. He's like, oh, man, great job, Snake, or something like that.
Yeah. Man, you did all those pull-ups, wow.
And it won't save at all. If you save your game, you'll go back to grip level 1. Oh, well. That actually happens. I was so pissed off when that happened, but yeah.
Wow. I didn't know that.
I was like, shit, man.
Oh, wasted all that time doing fucking pull-ups on the side of a tanker in the Hudson River. God damn it.
Yeah, that wasn't Hudson River, damn.
Yep.
And we'll step out of the menu a little bit, because then there's also, like, they did changes to the game mechanic. Like, this time, like, the Mark 22 Hush Puppy Tranquilizer modified gun, like, didn't have a permanent suppressor. Like, suppressors weren't permanent anymore. Like, they never were. Like, in MGS 1 and 2, like, they were. You could just equip it, and then you would just keep, like, doing, like, sound effects instead of, like, the... I can't simulate a gunshot with my voice, so I won't try, but, yeah. But then, like, yeah, they had, like, deteriorating, they had, like, deteriorating suppressors, so you had to watch your shots, you know, yeah.
Yeah, because then, right, the suppressor would break, and if you weren't paying attention, you know, you'd fire that one shot with the broken suppressor, and... Oh, shit, where is he?
Yeah, you had to, like, manually re-equip it in the quick menu, yeah. If it ran out, which is cool. I love how, like, that was also, like, because people really liked, I was, like, back in MGS, back through, like, he always loves having, like, the flashy-ass guns in the game and stuff, you know, in the Metal Gear games. And, like, MGS3 with, like, the menu system, you finally had, like, the 3D viewer, so you could also check out how the guns look and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, spin them around and, like, see how, like, as much as they were, like, sort of, like, they were, like, PS2 models of guns, like, with kind of blurry, like, camo texture stuff, it was still pretty cool to see them that way. That survival knife, like, that was, like, the most awesome-looking survival knife. And then, like, something that people complained about was, like, how, like, the overhead view was, like, was the only camera option you had. You couldn't, like, see it in front of you, you had to go in first-person view.
Yeah.
Which to me didn't, like, because I was, like, I mentioned last time with the MGS2 episode, like, I would play, like, only for, stun missions. Like, I would never go for a kill.
Right.
Because after, like, how they were, like, I think we did talk about this, actually, like, after the whole thing was, like, yeah, you can choose to kill nobody in this game. and like deaths would like attract like, you know, people would like go into high alert if like they saw like someone like a dead trooper on the ground. So like, it's like, okay, like I'll just use my Mark 22 and like just like, and if there's no laser sights, I have to use the sights like on the gun, like on the top there, to try and nail these guys in the head in one shot, like with the tranquilizer. And then like, I don't know, I guess like for me it felt like I was actually like getting into like, as you use that phrase, get into the game, but like getting more immersed in it by like trying to take in the environment in first person.
Yeah, you're getting in character when you're having to, you know, get inside the character's head to, you know, you're getting in a first person to aim. You're occupying that space, you're occupying that body.
Yeah, like I can only go so far, like, you know, because with the overhead view, I can only go so far, like I could take a couple steps and then scan the area around, you know, with first person view, see another guy there, and just get him with the Mark 22 again. I felt the most in Nagan, like, I think it was lousy, it was, like loud as hell, but it had, like, the best trank value. And then, like, if you were in the mountain area, like, in, like the sort of desert mountain crossover area, and you use the sniper rifle, like, the most in Nagan there, like, they didn't really hear.
Oh, because it was that far away.
It was so windy and stuff. Yeah, that too.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because there was the ambient noise, yeah.
And then they're talking about, like, yeah, there's such high altitude, you need to watch your stamina, like, you need to keep eating to keep your stamina up, because you're, like, there's, like, less oxygen in high altitudes and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, again, like, another perfect example of, you know, a game mechanic that is naturalistic, but not, you know, it's not just, like, naturalistic for its own sake, it's also... It's, you know, you're raising the level of challenge from the game, you know, that that much later on.
And you could like bomb ammo depots or like the food storage areas. You could just like, that was like the only real use for the TNT dynamite, really.
Yeah.
But you could do that, and then eventually you'd hear people like, "I'm so hungry, I need food." And if you have rotten food, you could just throw it, and they'd be like, "Food!" And just run over, eat it, and then they get stomach
and they get
run
sick.
Away.
Yeah.
Oh, no, they wouldn't run away, but I love this, because every once in a while, they would go, like, start to get constipated. They never run to the bathroom, but they're like, oh! And then all those soldiers around, they'd be like, what's wrong? They run forward there. And it's, like, it's sort of a meta as well, making fun of, like, how busted the AI is for the guards. But then, like, they would get recurring stomach aches, to the point where, like, those other, his fellow troops around him would never go back to their stations.
Right.
Like, what's up? So he gets it back up, he's like, oh, okay, I'm just like, oh!
You just keep him stuck there, yeah.
Yeah. It was like, at some point, because I just sent, like, trying to go, like, go for the no alerts, you know? And that was, like, a brilliant way to, like, help people, like, if they were trying to use that. Like, you could bomb those, like, depots and stuff and, like, get away far away enough to, like, they won't catch you and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, because they'd never be able to see you if you had them all clustered up in one area, you know, by the time you set something off, you are already too far away for them to find you.
And then, helps out in ways you don't expect, it's mostly a linear game, you don't actually, like, travel back too much, but then, like, when you do go back to those places, like, people would be, like, still, like, the ammo depot and the food stores would still be destroyed, so they would, like, run out of, like, a mech if they did happen to catch you. And they try to shoot you, but they just saw a rifle, they would run out, like, of that. That would be like, the only clip they had. They'd have to resort to, like, the handgun, or, like, run up to you and try to do, like, close quarters fight, you know?
Yeah.
And then, like, back at Grozny Grad, like, they were, like, hungry as hell. And then you had, like, that rotten food, like, the poisonous food, whatever, like, most like the rotten one. You don't want to kill them. Like, throw it at them. And then, like, that would empty out all the guards. They can walk back into Grozny Grad, like, just fine.
Yeah.
You also had, like, again, like, keeping the food alive, like, keeping the animal alive as a regular-ass animal. You could, well, obviously not the biggest ones, like, because the Adrian Gavial, I think it was, like, the biggest animal you could capture. Like, biggest animal, like, you couldn't capture it. You had to, like, kill it to get its food, get a consumable in three parts. That was the thing about the Adrian Gavial, yeah. Everything else was, like, practically small enough. You could, like, capture it and keep it in a cage, I think, except for some fish, but yeah. Actually, you can't tranquilize fish at all. Like, if you throw a flashbang into a, this is awesome. Like, you throw a flashbang into a pond and it explodes, all the fish rise up and they're all stunned and they're all like, and they all instantly die.
Wow.
So you hear like boom, and then they all go up and it's like. Bling, 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 bling.
I'd never tried that.
Like, I don't know if I played it. Actually, I probably did play it. Maybe not like to the insanest extent that I did with a. with MGS2, but I know I had, like, a save file with 7 recorded playthroughs of MGS3, mostly because it recorded it in 3 digits, so you could have, like, a 007 if you wanted, and I was like, people were like, oh, if you played through a save file on that, then you get something special, and you don't.
Oh.
You don't. I'm sorry. But, yeah, that was really cool. I find as much as I could, all the secrets I could do, like, all the stuff I could mess around with, yeah. There weren't as much, like, you can't beat Vulcan by cartwheeling into him, because, you know, it's not possible. nothing as loony as that, but, yeah. Yeah, you talk some, because I was talking a bit much there, yeah.
No. I mean, it's just the opportunities for, I mean, what people like to call emergent play, which I think is kind of a problematic term. But, you know, the opportunities for taking advantage of the game mechanics in kind of unconventional ways. You know, opportunities for the player to be creative. Like, you know, doing things like throwing a flashbang into a pond and stunning all the fish so you can catch them and eat them. Or, you know, blowing up an ammo depot so that, you know, the guards that come after you run out of bullets and they have to get close to you. You know, shit like that. You know, I mean, like, that's all of that stuff. That's just, like, you know, fantastic examples of game design. And, you know, I mean, it is, at least from my perspective, because I'm not into the whole linear story-driven thing quite so much anymore. It's, you know, it's kind of a drag that all of these really, really amazing mechanics are kind of put into this very linear structure that I feel like almost doesn't do justice to the mechanics themselves, because, you know, you're giving yourself fewer and fewer opportunities to do clever shit with those mechanics.
Oh, yeah. Like, the original concept of MGS3 was, like, the jungle was going to be, like, a vast open world, like, he wanted to, like, eventually, I think he called it, like, GTA in the jungle or something like that, you know, like, it would be, like, one big place. It wouldn't be, like, you would walk past, like, at certain cutscenes, like, you walk past an area and then, like, either jump, like, down a really high ledge you can't go back up, or, like, the door behind you, like, explodes and you can't, like, go back through or something like that. But if he had done, like, a fully, like, open world, open jungle like that, then, yeah, that would have been pretty nuts.
Yeah. I mean, and I would love to play a game like that. I would love to play an open world game that incorporates the, you know, the kinds of mechanics that you get in a Metal Gear Solid game. Because I feel like they're very well suited to an open world game. You know, it's just unfortunate that, you know, those mechanics, you know, only find their use in, you know, this very kind of linear point A to point B kind of structure.
While it wasn't on par of like beating Salt only cartwheels, I do remember like loading up like a while ago, like there was like a save file like for the Fear boss fight. I was like, oh great, like I think I'll replay MGS3 and like I'll start with this save file. And then I load up and I was like, oh great, all my food spoiled. And then it gave me an idea. I was like, okay, like when the Fear gets hungry, because with the Fear's like spider camo, like even if you equip it, it's the same thing. Like it drains your stamina, but keeps your camo consistent rate. For him, it keeps it completely invisible, so you need to use heat vision.
Right.
But then, like, he eventually has to replenish his stamina, so then you can throw your own food. You can throw your own, like, food there for him to eat. So you can either capture, like, the poison dart frogs, or, like, you know, kill the poison dart frogs around the arena, and, like, throw them in there for him to catch. He's just like, oh, I see food! And he gets there and, like, eats it, and he's like, oh, it's poison! And he runs around, and he's like, eventually he vomits, and he drops his own stamina. Or you can throw your own, like, rotten food, and he's like, oh, it's rotten! And he throws up again, and then to the point where he gets, like, 1 point of stamina and just, like, barrel-rolled into him, and then that's how I beat him.
Oh, wow.
I love it.
That's awesome. I love all the opportunities for doing unconventional shit in those games.
Yeah. And people, everyone loves, like, the boss fight with the end.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course, you know, if you just let the... If you just let time pass and he just dies of old age.
Yeah. Just push him over and it's like... Like whatever jungle noise they use for soundtracks, but yeah.
Yeah.
He does that slow motion walk away, and he looks what's behind him. And... Oh man, like, yeah, all the bosses explode. Let's talk about Robot Masters.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that they all explode saying their name.
Yeah. The pain. Yeah, I won't do it again. But yeah, like the fear. Exploding, like shooting those like What was that freaking Brazilian something something spider that he used the venom of?
Yeah. Like it was some like obscure species of spider.
Yeah, and then like the Fury took it up to 11 when he like flies himself into the ceiling of like that sewer area and then turns into two giant floating faces of fire.
Oh Jesus!
Remember that? Oh God, I love that part. And then like it was hilarious. Like Snake has to like try to find a way out after the first one kind of explodes around him, and then like that second base is actually like sort of looking around looking for Snake. And Snake's like taking up his like survival knife. Like he's like he says he could like take on that thing hand to hand. Love it.
I'm going to fight a giant face made of fire.
I love at some points like the cutscenes like hit like really smooth frame rate again. Like the intro scene to you see it really dip when the flame effect comes on, like when the flames go over the place. But then like when he's just like, slowly walking, like he's walking at one side and then the Fury, like you see him like you don't really see, like there's no face to see, but like you don't see it. It's sort of just shots just his body or like his silhouette walking around, and it's totally just like smooth as hell.
Yeah,
I thought that was like shot really well. Like I guess he was like a fan of Hitchcock, like Kojima, I guess.
It's very clear that he's a fan of Hitchcock, because Hitchcock was this like very what's the word for it? He was a very authoritative filmmaker. You know, he was I had instructors in film school, you know, who described it as like Hitchcock was the kind of guy who would grab you by your head, who would just grab the sides of your head and go, okay, look at this. Now look at this. Now look at this other thing. And, you know, like, the camera is, like, very deliberately going, like, I'm gonna show you this bullshit, and then I'm gonna show you this other bullshit. And it's, like, this very, very explicit kind of thing.
Let's talk about we're talking about the bosses a little bit. Let's talk about the other characters. Like, Naked Snake, like, you remember, like, how, like, we've had two games of Solid Snake being, like, a totally straight-laced, like, hardened soldier. And then, like, Naked Snake is, like, kind of goofy, like, when you compare him to, the Solid Snake, you know?
Yeah.
I ate a glowing mushroom and I recharged my batteries. Paramedic's like, excuse me for a second, and you hear like an off mic conversation with him and Sigint, with her and Sigint, Mr. Sigint. He's like, hey, he's already pretty crazy, like sure, like eating a glowing sure, let him believe whatever the hell he wants.
Yeah, but I'm also remembering the first time that you get into the cardboard box.
Yep.
If you get into the cardboard box and you call Sigint, he has that whole monologue about how he was meant to be in that box. That was just where he belongs. I just feel safe.
This is where I was meant to be, inside the box. Uh-huh. This doesn't make any sense to you. Not even a little.
Are you crazy, man?
Yeah, and then, like, forget, yeah, Major Tom would have his own bouts of insanity sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody in that game was pretty unhinged.
It's not a cookie, it's a scone. It's afternoon tea. And then, Paramedic was a great as a save lady, because every time you save, you would actually, she would talk about her favorite movies, and it would actually be Kojima's favorite movies of the time and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Talk about Magnificent Seven, which is like a Seven Samurai remake, or like Godzilla and all that stuff.
Yeah, those little bits of popular culture just thrown in for the hell of it.
I love how the interface like didn't really like work out the same way in MGS2, but in MGS3 like you had like sliding cards, you could see like different sides of their face, like there are different like profile shots of the characters, like who you're calling. If you call them enough times, like eventually would unlock like trivia bits.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, fucking Easter eggs. That's fucking rad.
It got up to like a 7 out of 7 like cards, the ladder 4 or ladder 3 would be trivia. Like it would say like Major Zero's last name starts with O. And that's why he's named her Zero.
That's helpful.
And I think it also, and it's funny because his last name is just O. It's O H. in the MGS4 reference file, where they put everything together, and it's like consistent with the MGS3. So his last name is just David O. His full name is David O.
Oh, awesome.
And that was also in the character sheet that was leaked. Yeah.
Damn.
So it's kind of funny that they named Solid Snake after Major Zero.
Damn.
Like out after the fact, like have the implications of that and stuff. But yeah. And then I forgot all the other trivia things, but those are really cool too. Yeah. And then you got little shots of like them and you got a shot of Mr. Siggen like playing basketball.
What?
Yeah. And like a shot of paramedic like as a nurse like in an army tent or something like that. Yeah. I don't think I ever called enough with Eva to get like all their cars there, or like, and you don't spend enough time with the boss to get her all the trivia. I don't think, but yeah, that was pretty rad. And oh yeah, talking with Mr. Siggen in general, like talking about the weapons and stuff, and also like Nigginstake being such a weapon junkie. Like everyone remembers like the scene where Eva gives him like the M1911A1,
and she's standing in front of him like half naked. Like, you know, jumpsuit zipped down to almost her crotch, and she's just kind of leaning over him, and all he can think about is how fucking awesome this gun is. Which is interesting, because, like, it's partly funny, you know, for the obvious reasons, but it's also partly depressing, because you have to realize that, like, wait a second, like, this is all this guy understands. Like, his life revolves around this shit. How could he know any better? You know, and it's a little sad, but then of course you watch the secret theater version where it turns out to just be a lighter.
Yeah.
And that's even better. That's my favorite. That's my favorite one of the secret theater bits. The one with the one where the gun is a lighter. It's that one and the one where he makes the little butterfly out of plastic explosive, and when he slaps it onto the tank,
he
it just explodes
the
right
so
away.
Hard it makes it explode.
Yeah. He just trips the timer just by slamming it, and just, and then it just cuts to the nuclear explosion from earlier with that bomb.
Yeah. Snake, can you hear me? Snake. I'm trying to get the entire the feeding ramp is polished to a mirror sheen. The slides reinforced, and the interlock has been tightened for added precision. The sight system is original too. A long type trigger with non-slip grooves. A ring hammer. The base of the trigger guard has been filed down for added grip. And not only that, nearly every single part of this gun was expertly crafted and customized. It's longer if you call Mr. Siggen and have that damn thing equipped. And it adds, like, because if you talk to Mr. Siggen, and like in a little slider thing I mentioned again, because it's like, you know, a little slides thing for a slideshow, and then like, it shows like every, you can like look at every, also, for paramedic, they call animals. They call her about like the animals in the area, and it shows you all the animals and the slides. And for Mr. Siggen, it shows you the weapons.
Yeah.
And if you talk to him about the M1911A1, it expands to like 18 slides, and it's like 12 of those are just for every single part of the gun that he talks about. And it cuts to every single slide when he talks about like, and he also like to bind it so he can make it easier to put in the magazine. And it's like he says over and over and over, and then at the end, and Mr. Siggen always says, "Lobby damn, that's some gun."
God damn it.
do you like it? Because, you know, again, like, cutscenes are not interactive by nature. But, like, you know, Kojima made them all in real time so he could just have you, like, press R1 and look through Snake's eyes and see stuff, you know?
Yeah. Which I thought was, I thought that was a really great touch. For the moment that everyone remembers where you go into first person and you can see the end holding up that fucking sign.
You mean the sorrow, yeah.
The sorrow, right, not the end, yeah.
It's holding up a couple of signs, like the first one where he's like holding up the frequency to open the jail cell.
Yeah.
Everyone made memes about it, like people were just holding up something and then they just scratch on 144.75.
Yeah. That's right, he's just standing behind people holding a cardboard sign, which I thought was awesome for a character who was supposed to be all, like, mysterious and intimidating.
And, like, and also totally, like, depressing, because he was, like, the boss's, like, first start of darkness or whatever.
Yeah. But there's also a really good bit with that first-person mechanic, like, right at the end of the game, when...
It's not marked at all, yeah, you have to hold down R1.
Yeah, you just have to hold it down until it happens, and Snake is just a rather big boss at that point. He's just saluting the boss's grave, and when you go into first-person, it's all blurry, because he's tearing up, which I thought was fantastic.
And the one before that is, you're in the Oval Office, whatever office it is, you're being awarded that medal, and, like, the president's trying to shake your hand, and then you look out the window, and Ossoff's just, like, chilling out the window. He just steps out into the window and just looks at you, and he's like, hey, hand gesture, I'm out.
Oh, damn. Yeah, I remember that.
And then, like, there were also other cool things, like, you could look down the sights of a gun, or... Like, when you're in the sniper, when you're about to, like, snipe the bridge, equipped with the C3, and you can, like, get a shot of, like, you see the Shadowhawk, like, closing in with those guys on their motorcycles and stuff.
Right.
Well, those are the really funny ones, obviously, like, where, like, you just get a shot, you see, like, a snake just staring at Eva's cleavage.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the very first one, like, in that.
It's like, the first time that you meet her, he's just like, boobs!
and he's like, okay, I just fulfilled the boobs joke quota. I'm gonna start like fantasizing about guns instead now.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The other funny one was like when Volgan's like monologuing inside the hangar, and then you see the sorrow because like the countdown. You already started the countdown clock for the C3, you know.
Right.
So then like it's you see him floating around like holding like yo, just get this much time left. Hurry up.
Yeah. He's telling you that. Yeah, I mean, I like that stuff because it's a nice way to. It is kind of a nice way to sort of mitigate the problem of cutscenes. I have very different ideas about what to do about all that stuff, but nonetheless, it's a nice way to kind of circumvent the problem of not being able to interact while you're being delivered some exposition.
And back to when I was talking about how, like, in MGS 2, if you have the M9 equipped, you could, like, have, like, them using the M9 as a lethal weapon. And here, like, it even showed it, like, in the subsistence when they had, like, when they showed, like, you could have all those extra, like, camo patterns, they're all on the disc, so you don't have to download anymore. And they show, like, a shot of, like, practically every single camo pattern, like, equipped, like, in a single cutscene. And you could, like, have those, like, yeah, just showing it, and it kind of made it look kind of goofy. Like some people, like at the end when they're fighting the boss in the flower field, they would have kabuki mask and play as a scientist.
Right. Yeah.
So at the end, he's rolling around the rug, around the tiger rug with Eva, as a scientist kabuki.
It's awesome. Yeah. Well, it's like the in MGS2 Substance. You could go in and you could play any one of the cutscenes and just swap out the character models.
Oh, yeah. So you could have Rose fighting Raiden at the end instead of Solidus.
Oh, yeah.
But then she still didn't change the voice, but it'd be funny if they did.
Yeah.
Also, a really cool thing as well, like, being able to, like, even you have the CQC hold by default, and then you could interrogate the soldier, like, that you've got there for, like, clues or something like that. And then, like, the best thing was, like, they would give you a codec frequency, and then you could call that, and you would get like a song, like because it's a radio, so you tune into a song, and they would like heal you or something like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I very rarely used the interrogation mechanic. I guess because I just kind of like poked around and
found it and just kind of found my way through shit. But yeah, I mean, again, more super awesome Kojima details.
I guess that's enough about playing it. I guess we could talk about, like, I guess, like, some of the story and theme stuff. Because with MGS3, like, he started with the whole meme gene scene thing, where he's like, oh yeah, like, this is a trilogy. Like, there's a massive, like, a meaningful arc to it. And then, like, it's just kind of funny, he calls it meme gene scene, because it works with MGS, like, the acronym. But then, like, it turns out it's, like, gene for MGS1. Talking about how, like, you know, the main theme is, like, genetics and stuff. And then, like, this, MGS2 was all memes.
Yeah.
And then scene is, like, I forgot what this point was with scene. It was, like, I don't know, like, the times and stuff. Like, that's a...
No, it was, I mean, it was kind of about the zeitgeist of the Cold War.
Yeah. And a bit of an in-joke, like, where the boss is, like, she says, like, think back to World War II. Like, the U.S. and Russia used to be allies, and now we're enemies. Do you think we'll still be enemies in the 20th century? 21st century? Somehow I doubt it.
Yep. Lol. yeah, it's funny from a, I mean, I guess from a thematic perspective, like about the Cold War specifically, that you're playing this game that, you know, it takes place during the Cold War. You're dealing with Cold War themes, except you are doing things that, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, these are like top secret things that nobody was supposed to have known about the Cold War. So, you know, you are engaged in the top secret shit that is essentially the sort of practical expression of all of the sort of like suspicions that everybody had during the Cold War. Which makes it interesting, you know, that you're not playing with the sort of themes of the Cold War that people were exposed to. You're playing with, like, the fucking conspiracy. You know, like, you are enacting all of the conspiracy theories that people had during the Cold War. So it's interesting, because, you know, your actions are kind of bringing to fruition a lot of these suspicions.
Well, I don't know if we should, like, I mean, we already said a lot, but I don't know if we should, like, get into, like, the biggest parts of a... But then, we might as well, you know, because the game has been out, and anyone who's really buying the HD collections is buying them because they did play the games, and they want to play them in HD again, so... He's going to just talk about how the boss's story is, like, the big thing is, like, yeah, like, the boss didn't really betray the U.S. at all. And, like, Volgan was just, like, a giant fucking asshat for shooting at the nuclear facility.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, you know, the boss's story in particular is just, like, fucking heartbreaking. You know, because, you know, she did what she did in order to prevent war. You know, when she tells that story about going into orbit in the space probe and talking about the way that her perspective changed when she saw the Earth and saw how tiny it was. And saw how important it was going to be for her to, you know, to put an end to the Cold War, to put an end to international conflict. You know, she's explaining it all in this context of, you know, she went into space, gained this enormous global perspective. And is so committed to that she is willing to defame herself as a defector in order to, in order to bring about a peaceful end to the Cold War. And that's just like, fuck, like you just, you know, that just hits you like a fucking freight train when she tells that story.
Let's not forget that she was carrying during like World War II, and then she had her baby, I don't even know if she was at the beaches D-Day, but like,
yeah,
she
on stormed the beach at Normandy.
Like, freaking Omaha Beach at D-Day?
Yep.
Holy shit. Oh my god, they had the baby right there? Like, after watching Saber Power Run, I'm like, okay, now that shit just got much more real.
Yep.
My god.
Oh, she's a pretty badass character.
Yeah.
On a lot of levels.
She had a whole, like, she had that scar down her, like, torso. That looks like that's like shortest shaped like a snake.
Yeah.
And like when she dies, like it's sort of like symbolically, like it slithers away from her.
Yeah, like the scar slithered off of her body and became a snake. Which again, you know, I thought that was a wonderfully poetic moment. I mean, like actually, the greatest. I mean, you know, the greatest moment for me in MGS3, and actually the greatest moment in any Metal Gear game for me, was, you know, dropping the boss in that field of flowers, and, you know, Snake / Big Boss is standing over her with a gun pointed at her, and the camera just zooms out, and it keeps going. And it keeps going.
And the black bars go away, and you're like...
keeps going. Yeah, and the black bars go away. And the camera stops. And then you're going, what the fuck? What is this? Am I... No. No. And when that happens, like, you almost, like... I think for most people, when that happens, you almost rebel against it. You try not to. You just say, no, fuck it, I'm not pulling the trigger, goddammit. I'm not gonna do it. But after a while, it becomes clear that you've got no choice.
And if you wait long enough, like the game takes control out of your hands. It's like, no, you like it has to be done, and it does it, and then, like it does it for you. Actually,
I mean, I feel like I might have liked it better if you could just stay there forever.
Like it stays there long enough. Like eventually, like yeah, like the music like fades away, and then you just hear like the wind like blowing the pedals and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would just let you lay there for like an hour, just watch that scene. But then like it didn't make sense again because there is that time limit for the MiGs like bomb the area. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's incredibly brutal because, you know, I mean, it's doing the sort of linear story-driven game thing where, you know, your actions are already a foregone conclusion. You know, you don't really have any control. Like, you've got no choice. This woman is going to die. Except, you know, even though you have no choice, the game is still making you push the button anyway. Which is just this spectacular giant fuck you, which I love. I mean, I thought that was a brilliant move.
Like, I don't know, I don't recall ever really crying in MGS3, but I know I was tearing up a lot. Yeah.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, you get choked up at a moment like that if you've been, you know, if you've been going with the cutscene, if you've been, you know, if you've been suspending your disbelief and you've been kind of meeting the game halfway when it comes to a story, then yeah, absolutely, it'll get you.
And then that scene where they're trying to escape in that the WIG, the wig, and then Ocelot comes back.
Yeah. There was that secret theater moment where he jumped into the plane and then just like bounced through it and fell out the opposite door.
And he says again, "You're pretty good." What?
Yeah.
I love the way they cut, like, what'd you call it? Ocelot finally pulls out the revolver, like, after all that CQC. And it's like, alright, I'm gonna get you this time. And then Eva has to. And he shouts for Eva to throw him the other gun. And then it turns out they both have no bullets, but they just each click six times anyway. It's like, cuts, rapid cuts, like, to the point where it gets to just their eyes and zooms back out. It's totally nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, remember that, was that the bullet that jammed? Like he's been having it like on his neck ever since. He pulls it out. He's like, "What do you say to one last showdown?"
Yeah.
And the whole bit again, like with the interactivity in the cutscene, like you can press R1 to actually watch Ocelot spin those revolves around. And what you call it? If you depending on whether you win or lose that little bit, you know, it's a blank all the time. You know.
Yeah.
Except for if you shoot like near Ocelot, like you don't shoot to hit him. Like, it actually shoots a bullet and, like, it dents, like, the back of the wig. So,
oh.
Yeah.
That's convenient.
It's, yeah. Sounds like the one time where like, it does, like, it is a bullet, like, it doesn't, like, hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Clover's like, it's a blank! Woo, that was fun. What's your name? Snake. No, not that name. You're not a snake, not an ocelot. We're men. Names. My name is Adamska.
Yeah,
what's yours?
Yeah, yeah.
And you've been hearing Snake being called like Jack the whole time. But then he says John, and you're like, But then later on, Hideo Kojima said in an interview, he was like, "Oh yeah, Jack and John are basically the same sort of name, sort of."
No, I mean, I do know a couple of people who are named John and go by Jack. I guess.
So I guess it is.
Yeah, I guess Jack can be a nickname for John. I don't know.
I remember doing the hand gesture a lot. Like, there would be times, like, after playing the games, like, and getting so into it, like, I'll just sort of mimic sort of stuff from the game in real life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Doing the ocelot hand gesture.
Yeah, the whole hand gesture. Like, in Assassin's Creed, I wouldn't do parkour, but then I would, like, tuck in my ring finger while I'm running. I wouldn't have a blade coming out, but yeah.
So you gotta make room for that blade, man.
Yeah. Apparently Da Vinci was such a genius that they decided, like, they didn't have to cut the finger anymore, like, part two.
Yeah.
That and then, like, leaning against the wall the same way. MGS2 was, like, the last game, like, he leans against the wall like that. Like, with his back, like, in the cinematic sense, like, just leaning up with their back towards the wall, you know?
Yeah.
MGS4, like, they started, like, they're, like, pressing it against the wall. Like, pressing towards the wall, like, sort of look over the shoulder, conveniently, whatever the heck. And then with MGS Subsistence, they had the whole, like, besides, like, the whole camera view thing, they had a boss rush thing, which was here or there. They didn't have VR missions, but they had a boss rush. They had a whole demo theater where, again, you could customize your like how Snake looked, and then just watch every cutscene like that. So you could, like,
yeah,
it was cool, great having a demo theater again because MGS1 had that, and then like you couldn't like really revisit the cutscenes in MGS2, which kind of bummed me out. Unless you got document, but then that didn't have any audio again, so I was like, But then having that in MGS3 was great. MGS3 Subsistence was like. I think that was like the closest, that's probably like the most extras they tacked on. Because then they also had like the original MSX Metal Gears 1 and 2 on the second disc.
Yeah, and then if you got the special edition, the third disc had the entire game cut together into a feature-length movie.
Yeah, it was kind of weird though, because they had like narrators for every chapter. It was like chapter divided. I would say it's more like an 8-minute, like sort of, like a downloadable miniseries sort of thing.
Kind of, yeah.
They had narrators, and then like, they had really weird things where they would shoot it cinematically, but then like, they would always have like Snake and Tiger Stripe camo and using lethal weapons. And we show like, oh yeah, this is a crazy action sequence. But then it kind of like to quote it, like it sounded like didn't ring true for me because again, like I would only play stealth, really. And if I ever did like go Rambo, I would just like do that and then just like reload the save file.
Yeah, yeah. No, they made it a bit more of an action movie when they did that.
Yeah, and they also had like the MGS4 trailer there, like the very first one. The first one where it was like, oh yeah, this is PS3 engine. I was like the Tokyo Game Show 2005 one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
For Shoto's Old Snake and the Metal Gear Mark II and Otacon.
Right.
And the Geckos. And it was weird because they had this weird compression where like you could see this compression to the video files, but you could see it very clearly like they had a sort of overlay to make things like a little bit blurry, but then like there was like a line down the middle.
Oh, I never.
It was kind of weird.
I never noticed.
I remember, like, it was, like, the Hideo blog updates. Like, I don't know if they removed the entry. I remember reading it. I know I didn't make this up. I know I'm not making this up, but there was an entry where he was, like, they were freaking out. Like, they couldn't, like fit the MGS4, like, a trailer into the existence disc because they actually, like, I think they advertised it, like, as in there. And then, like, oh, man, we can't fit it in. Like, what the hell are we going to do? Oh, my God. And they were like, oh, wait, no, we figured it out. Compression.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, file size is... You'd be surprised at how much of a problem that is.
They were only on a DVDs. I don't even know if that was a dual-layer DVD. Probably not. I think MGS2 Substance was, because playing on the regular PS2, like the very like the before the Slim models, like there was like a loading gap. Like it would like after the and then it would like a half second before it goes wing, and then you hear the people talk. And so and like, so it's like a random thing. It's a little thing there. There's a little thing that I experienced, an interesting little thing, because, again, I mentioned that I was reloading that old save. I was like, oh, yeah, because it was, like, a run-up to MGS4, I think. I was replaying MGS 1, 2, and 3, and I was like, okay, for the hype for MGS4, it was going nuts. Like, I replayed 1, and then 2, and then I was playing 3. I was like, oh, I already have a save file in progress. Like, I don't think I'll play that. And then it got to the Sorrow fight, because, you know, like, the thing about the Sorrow is, like, you're going down basically like a river of sticks, but then you're like you're seeing like all the soldiers you killed.
Yeah.
And the Cobra unit walk by you and stuff. And it's like then there's always all those gags, like if you kill them a certain way, like if you ate the vulture's meat, like after it like bit down on like a dead soldier's body and then you ate that vulture's meat, then it says like, you've eaten me, what have you done? And then if you shot them in the groin, like, I'm worthless now, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
All that stuff. Besides them like going like with the agony filled like screams like yeah, you know?
Yeah.
And then like so occasionally the ghost trying to reach to you and grab your stamina. And the thing is, like, because I mentioned, I always go for no kills, but then, like, at some point, I guess, like, I played and, like, I did, like, kill a bunch of soldiers. Then, like, when I reloaded the save and I got to that fight, I was like, holy shit, kill people in the save file? I was actually stunned by, like, my past actions, like, in a very roundabout sort of way. I was like, damn, like, what the hell was I doing? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, I had to, like, take a moment. I was like, what the hell? Like, actually, like, kill dudes? Come on. I guess I was always the kind of guy like take games a bit more seriously, you know.
In most games that I've played, if there is an opportunity to avoid, to avoid killing enemies, I'll usually take it. I did that with Deus Ex. I did do a playthrough of Deus Ex in which not only did I not kill anyone, but nobody even knew I was there. Never got spotted ever, which was very hard to do, and I did it on one of the easier difficulty settings. But I take that same path. Playing Assassin's Creed, I didn't kill anybody who wasn't a target.
Did you ever go for the pure stealth, no alert kills?
I managed to do that for the first several, but after that it got much harder and I didn't bother. I was okay with being spotted. I would just have to stay hidden so I wouldn't have to kill anyone.
Remember the freaking actually before I got into that, there's also this bit where I was playing through MGS4, I think it was around post-launch, I wasn't feeling too bad about that game, but then I was just playing it just to get all the medals, and there was somewhere where it's like, get to kill a whole bunch of soldiers, and at some point I was like, okay, I really can't do this anymore, and then I just I got, after getting the medal, I was like, okay, I like, because then there's a couple of playthroughs where it's like, medals where it's like, okay, you get seen this many times, but you don't get continues or get killed this many times, or use this much health items. Or you beat this game at a certain amount of time, but whatever. But then you kill this much guys, and I was like, okay, screw those other medals. I'm just done with playing this game for just that. I feel like if you give the option, you shouldn't reward people for killing. You know,
the moment that killing your opponents becomes optional, as opposed to, obligatory. Just part of the game. The moment that stops being compulsory, I don't think it makes sense to reward the player for actually doing it.
Yeah, it felt really backward. When it's a game, if you get no alerts, you get a bandana, and no alerts, you get a stealth cam unit, and if it's no kills, you get a bandana for infinite ammo. But then again, if you get a single kill, you get nothing.
Yeah.
Again with that zero dragon point driven points, zero driven points reward, something like that. And then I was like, well, it's kind of odd. I think I don't know how serious this is. This is I remember doing a little blog here or there. I did a write up about looking back at the series after MGS4, and then MGS3. I wonder if it worried anybody. It was a great, in general, obviously it was, an outstanding game, a great story, all that stuff you mentioned before and everything, but then what if it, some people were like, well, what's going on, why is, Naked Snake, suddenly, even he has a mentor that he had to kill, just like Snake had to kill Big Boss, and even he had, a support team, just like a Campbell and all that stuff, and a whole lot of, the same tropes are being played over, and it's like, I wonder if this sent up any red flags or anything like that.
Yeah, no, I don't think it really crossed anyone's mind at the time. Yeah, I think now we can look back at it and go, yeah, well, it is formulaic, but at this point, what game isn't? At the time, I don't think that mattered as much because the game was doing enough things new, that the things that were the same weren't really noticed because they were the same.
And when they were different, that it would stand out in a sort of it would, for humor, dramatic irony,
Yeah.
Where a Snake would talk about I'm never fit. I'm not fit to be a father. I'm never gonna have children. that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I remember what was it? It's like a random, you can have like a random, just like self-initiated codec call with paramedic, and she's like, just think about what you're gonna pass on, and then he's like, are you safe? You want to have my baby or something like that?
Yeah.
But then like they had to talk about like genetic, finding a way to keep people like on after they like keep a memory or like keep memories or like keep some essence of a person after they passed on, and reference like the whole soldier genes thing they tried to talk about in MGS1.
Right.
Like interesting callbacks to that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it is, you know, that kind of stuff is cool. I mean, you know, that's an opportunity that, you know, that you should always be taking when you're doing a prequel. I mean, it's the same thing with, you know, with all the time paradoxes, right? Like if you die, it's not game over, it's time paradox, because, you know, you can't die.
Oh, it is game over, but then it fades into time paradox if you let it go long enough or just click exit. Yeah.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I like how it does like it's like no, it said no, it doesn't say game over. It says Snake is dead, and that's how it gets enough letters to fade into time paradox.
Yeah. Right.
And if you shoot Ocelot when he's asleep, and then, you know, he kill him, and it says Ocelot is dead.
Yeah,
and then famously Colonel Campbell goes, Snake, you can't change the future like that. You've created a time paradox.
Yep.
Love for this game in general, but then like also feels like we didn't really say enough. I don't feel like as much as this is like two hours of chat.
Well, I mean, there's a lot to say about it because there's a lot of context for the Metal Gear games, because, you know, the franchise is enormous. It's, you know, it's a huge phenomenon all on its own, but, you know, it's also a very unique feature in the landscape of the Japanese game industry and the game industry at large. That, you know, it's you could write a book. You know, there's so much to capture there. I mean, it's still my favorite of the Metal Gear series. I think because it still has a lot of the kind of weird, inconsistent silliness that the series has always had. I mean, not silliness as in the silly humor, but silliness as in, you know, the weird sort of disconnect between the gameplay and the kind of linear structure of the game. But despite that, I think it's kind of the purest of the Metal Gear games, at least in my mind. You know, it's in my memory, it stands on the strength of its mechanics as opposed to the strength of its storytelling and its cutscenes more so than the others in the series. I really appreciate that about it. And, you know, the elements of wilderness survival and a lot of that, you know, again, those sort of naturalistic game design details, I think they're unmatched even now.
Remember, after you know that scene where Big Boss finally salutes, and then like he has those tears going down, and then it shows like those a timeline sort of thing of what happened after MGS3.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Sagan leaves to form ARPANET, and they eventually find the second half of the legacy, and then the remaining philosophers like dissolve, and like they become the Patriots.
Yeah.
And then the very last thing, 1972, the Les Enfants Terribles project.
The sons of Big Boss are born.
Yeah.
And here like a like friggin' just like a from the dart like to like the sort of dramatic like
yeah
like a bit there when that
it's almost the yeah it's like the Law and Order sound, you know, dun dun.
Yeah. And then like it's a first for the series. They actually licensed a pre-existing song. Like Rika Morinaka, whatever her name is, like she didn't write an original song for the credits. She did write a song for the game. Like it's plays on the radio during the love scene with Sake and Eva at the end. But they have Star Sailor's "Way to Fall" in the credits, playing that the entire playing there. Yeah.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, and that's like the only song I know of that band. But yeah, I love it. I was like when games have like a song here or there or whatever. Like I find like a really awesome song. I was like, oh yeah, hey, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that is kind of a common thing. A lot of games do that now.
Is that Massive Attack song that they played in the very last trailer for Uncharted? That was the one that sold me on buying the game. I was like, okay, this looks totally freaking awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And use a Massive Attack song. It's great. And just recently, Dark Souls had a song from the Silent... I forgot what they're called. Silent Comedy or something like that. Called Bartholomew. And it's, like, cut so well to that song. It's amazing.
Oh, awesome! I'm gonna have to watch that.
Yeah, it's on a. It's totally nuts because, like, I don't know if this is. I guess this is like Bamco's like ad money going into it. Like, you go to YouTube.com, it's the top banner. Like, I don't know if it's still that now, but you just go to YouTube.com and it's like right there.
Wow.
Like Dark Souls of all games is getting like that much exposure. You're like, whoa.
That's pretty fucking awesome.
Yeah.
Mad props to Bamco for that. Yeah, like, I've got a friend who's actually working on marketing for that game. I should congratulate him.
And I'm also really glad like we're not hearing any sort of like game breaking like stupid DLC decisions like they did for Beautiful Car Mario or anything like that. I think they've like they've refrained from that. You know, I mean, Enslaved had like a couple of costumes that you didn't really need. You know, that just like they were sort of like a crush here and there like. Infinite ammo or whatever, but...
What was game-breaking about Beautiful Katamari?
No, it's like not game-breaking so much as, like, there was a bunch of stuff that was already on the disc, like, stupid DLC decisions I'm talking about more, like...
Oh, stuff where, like, there was stuff on the disc that was locked out that you had to pay for.
Yeah, like, costumes or whatever the heck. Like, basically, like, just, like, something stupid that, like, you know, related to DLC. I'm just glad that Dark Souls doesn't have anything like that.
Yeah. No, that's definitely good.
Well, then again, like Dark Souls is really that kind of game anyway, so it's fine. Whew. We were talking about Metal Gear Solid 3, weren't we?
Yeah, we were. MGS3.
Yeah.
It's an awesome game. Yeah. I'm definitely gonna be buying the 3DS version. Even if it doesn't do anything new, it's Metal Gear Solid 3, and I can play it wherever I want.
Are you gonna nab the HD collection?
Oh, of course.
With 2-3 and Peace Walker.
Yeah.
It kind of bums me out in Japan, like, they separate Peace Walker from the set, so you have to buy... You have to pay, basically, for two, like, retail games in Japanese price to get the three. Unlike here, where it's they pay for one and get all three.
I understand that in Japan, they separated it out so that Peace Walker is a separate game, but the collection also includes MGS1.
I think so, yeah. As a PSN download, yeah. Like, for the first game, yeah.
Oh, as a PSN download, oh.
Yeah, obviously they're not remastering MGS1 in HD.
Aww.
I guess they feel like it's adequate enough, like, to get the nodding polygonal heads.
Yeah.
And it's have, like, the sort of basic upscaling that you could do with the PS3.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, you know, that's still okay. It's just, you know, I certainly wouldn't mind being able to play Twin Snakes on something other than a GameCube.
But then I wonder if they would have to, like, pay, like, because then, like, they did have, like, a lot of Nintendo anachronisms, like, there would just be, like, a Mario and Yoshi chilling in the computer room, in the computer lab.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have to pay Silicon Knights money again to, I guess, at some level. Because there's that picture of Dennis Dyack in the Psycho Mantis boss fight boardroom.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, there is. And Kitamura is there, too. Like, those are the three faces. Kojima, Kitamura, and, I think it's Kitamura. And Dennis Dyack.
Huh.
I'm fairly sure Dennis Dyack. I might have to look it up again, but yeah. I could have sworn he was in there.
Oh, go figure. I didn't know that.
Because there is that bit where in the cutscene where, like, he, like, it starts, like, he's warping, like, the entire room. and suddenly he's throwing fire all over the place, and then like you see the three like portraits are like randomly laughing with like cartoon like high pitched laughs. Yeah. The demonstration is over. And I'm still gonna throw fire around and make the whole place explode, sort of. Twin Snakes cutscenes. Backflip on a missile.
God.
And Liquid, even Liquid's like, whoa!
Damn.
I always loved that about that cutscene. Or like the completely random spin jump. When those Genome soldiers are shooting down at the elevator and the bullets are converging to the center and like a random explosion and Snake does a spin jump to get out of the way. Loving it.
I need to try that again.
Yeah. I need to hunt down a GameCube that can accept component cables and then like find a way to get a component cable for GameCube.
Yeah, I got really lucky because I as soon as I found out that the Wii U was dropping GameCube compatibility, I knew that, you know, the prices on used GameCubes were going to shoot up because of that. So I did manage to find a GameCube with the digital AV out, you know, with the jack for the component cable. And there's a store around here that has the component cables. It's just that they're $70, so
yeah. The reason why it's so expensive is because they don't actually build in like the component like hardware into the GameCube. Apparently, like it's a chip that they stuck on the port for the component cable.
The,
right?
The chip is actually inside the jack end of the cable.
Yeah. That's a unique way to both cost cut on the production of the console and make a really expensive accessory to profit on.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, it's funny because the component video cables are analog, but the port on the back of the GameCube is a digital port. Yeah, so it's because like that end of the cable, it accepts a digital signal, then turns it into an analog component signal inside the cable, and then. That's why the jack on the cable is so enormous, because there's a PCB in there.
That sounds very like convoluted and noodly, and like maybe they could have because 360 like the original, it has a component cable that also has like a regular RGB like a yellow like video cable in there, right? Conceivably you could just like have it all on one giant ass cable.
I think the reason that they didn't do that was because for some horrendously stupid reason, they wanted the GameCube to work with the same video cables as the SNES and the N64. Because the thing is that like the normal like composite video cables for the GameCube are the same ones for the N64 and the Super Nintendo.
Oh yeah, they are.
So they were just fuck it, keep the same cable. Then if people want to look at something that doesn't look like ass, make them use a separate cable.
You don't know how happy I was when I looked at the back of Super Nintendo finally for the first time in my life, not just to plug in a power cord with the attention span of a grade schooler, and realize that I could have RGB on the Super Nintendo. I was like, I don't have to hook up antenna, thank God!
Oh, yeah, 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 that you didn't have to,
yeah. For the longest time, we just used RF, yeah.
The RF adapter with the screwdriver, yeah.
Yeah, I mentioned that I have that ass TV that has only one input, and it's only antenna.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I think it's like mono. It has like one speaker. It's like, it's such a freaking old ass TV. It's like some off brand. I forgot what brand it is, but like it was chilling at my uncle's house at Abbey and Jay. I was like, oh, can I have this? And he's like, sure. No one's using it. And if it breaks, you can just throw it out. If it doesn't break, you don't want to just throw it out. It's fine.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh shit, I can put this in my room. And then I was like, there's only one fucking input, and it's RF. And I was like banging my head against the wall.
Oh God.
And then I decided, okay, I think I'll play GameCube on this thing at least. I can just catch up on Twilight Princess GameCube version. And then I'll just, like, I found out that you could just, like, because, you know, there's no RF interface. So there's like, a special plug they jerry-rigged for the GameCube. I was like, oh, great. And I looked around my house. I was like, where the fuck are the RF cables? I did not throw them out. How could I have thrown them out? I think I threw them out. Oh, shit. I was, like, banging my head against the wall again.
Just screwed at every turn.
Yeah. I was like, fuck it, I'm just gonna get that damn PS3D TV at the end of the year.
Yep.
That thing is like, I was like, man, yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty sweet idea, actually. And smart for them, you know. You sell the 3D TV with the PlayStation, and then suddenly you get a whole lot more people wanting to play 3D games.
Well, it's not necessarily with the PS3 system, but yeah. It comes with games, comes with the HDMI cable.
Yeah, I understand that there is also a bundle, but
Oh, maybe eventually, yeah. I'm sure it'll be like a Sony store, like exclusive offer. Save a couple hundred more dollars by having the PS3 with it and like everything, you know, all that stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, all this tangenting, I guess we are done talking about MGS3 for a while. I guess more MGS3 talk could be like appended to like if we talked about like the San Geronimo incident, which is what I like to call portable ops, because like you know, if you talk about like MGS3 and Metal Gear Solid 1, 2, 3, 4, Peace Walker, and then there's like one called portable ops, like it sounds kind of odd, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, me, you know, plot wise it belongs next to MGS3 and Peace Walker.
Yeah, it's in the in between there.
Yeah.
Yeah, talking about the 3 and Peace Walker. I guess we would have to talk with I get the sense talking about portable ops, so we would have to talk about that with MGS4.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's there's this weird kind of like continuity between them. I mean, I didn't play the PSP Metal Gears.
You didn't play the Acids, the Portable Ops, or Peace Walker, right?
Because, I mean, like, I only had a PSP very briefly, and the only thing I played on it was Wipeout.
Luminous. Oh, okay.
So I basically just played Luminous and Wipeout. Okay. And, yeah, not much else.
Mm.
I mean, like, back when they had first come out, I installed Open Firmware. And basically all I had was I copied my copy of Luminous, my copy of Wipeout, and I ripped my Final Fantasy VII discs and packaged them up into a PSP executable with some like weird hackish fucking homebrew app. Mm-hmm. And that was basically all I used my PSP for. So you know, I understand I missed out on a lot of good shit, but that was all I played on it.
Well, eventually when they, what'd you call it? Once they get those contract noodlings out of the way for some of the older PSP games, like, even FF Tactics came out, hit the PSN store for the PSP version.
Hmm.
That makes me happy because eventually we'll get Crisis Core.
Right.
But then I wonder if they'll just do, like, in Japan, like, the PSP remasters line, whereas, like, the PSP game, like a remade in HD for PS3, and then you can also do like this transferring like save compatibility thing.
Well, it's funny because I understand that what is it, Monster Hunter
Portable Third? Yeah,
Monster Hunter Portable Third, or the yeah, like whichever one it is the only it's only coming to the States as a PS3 remaster. It's not coming to the States on the PSP, which I think is...
Oh, yeah, they are looking in... That's right. Yeah, they're looking into... I read that story. Yeah, they're looking into bringing the PS3 version here. Yeah, yeah.
But not the... Yeah, so they're bringing the PS3 remaster of a PSP game here, but they're not bringing the original PSP title here.
Well, you know, talking about... I really hate talking about sales age, but I guess it would be like... It would sell a couple more on PS3 than a PSP game. Pirated as it is.
Yeah, no, it certainly would. That's definitely no contest in the sales department.
Mm. It's gonna be interesting to see how PSV does. The Vita, like I like calling it PSV, but it's interesting to see how that does with game sales and all that stuff, with simultaneous with digital, and all that crap.
I don't know. It'll be interesting.
I guess that I guess it's also sort of apparent to anyone listening right now that as much as I love like MGS3, I don't love it nearly as much as MGS2 because I can't think of any line stories I have MGS3. We did kind of basically do the best ones, like the cardboard box chill the chat.
Yeah.
and the feeding ramp, like the M19 gasm.
Yeah.
Yeah. When would you call it? When like the quota called paramedic. When after saving, and she talks about like, have you seen some insert James Bond movie name here? And he's like, and Snakes is like, man, like I haven't watched that, man. Like that's totally not realistic to how spies are. And it's like I don't know how anyone could like James Bond. And then Zero just pops in, and is like, how? What are you talking about? Don't like James Bond, Snake? And it's like, Major, what the hell?
Oh yeah.
I wanted to make you a briefcase, and you could totally use that. It has like gadgets inside. You could like totally beat up soldiers with it.
Yeah.
Or you make a snake-shaped gun. You can pretend you're grappling with it, and then you can shoot people while they're distracted. And it's like that's completely impractical, Major. It's like James Bond is the best thing to come out of the UK since The Mayflower. I wouldn't be surprised if we got 20 more of those movies. And then everybody's like, sounds totally freaking bored. Just like, Didn't you know Major's such a fucking fan of Snake, fucking fan of James Bond? He's gonna keep talking about him while you're done with this call. And Snake's fear of vampires.
Oh God.
To the point where you know that like that we don't even know what the heck that the Snake's nightmare sequence was for. Remember, like, if you, like, save at the prison area and, like, after, and you load up, I forget, I don't know if it's after some time, or you just load it up and then you, like, and then you just, like, kill random, like, you suddenly you're, like, some sort of weird game where you're, like, a dual-wielding, like, blade dude killing, wiping out zombies, and then suddenly turns into a werewolf as well. It's kind of weird.
Huh.
Oh, and then you talk to Mr. Sigan about that dream, and he's like, man, that's a fucked up dream. You wanna know a dream of mine? Everything is like talking about like, man, I went out there and it was like a giant walking tank, and everything it shot at turned into shit. Shoot a house and they turned to shit. Old man Johnny turned into shit. Shot that dog, he turned into shit. Everything was a giant mound of shit. I was like, oh my god. Oh my god.
A weird fucking game, man.
Yeah.
Kojima, you so crazy.
Snake, you're so weird. Yeah, freaking the high I'm Daisy comics from Peachy Fruit for like a Metal Gear Solid, like let's beat the Shaga Hard.
Yeah.
Also the one where paramedics like Snake, have you ever seen Dracula? No. Like, he's see half of it now is after he lost his eye and is after he lost his eye. And Snake is like, damn.
Yeah.
God. Oh yeah, her version of what you call it? That's more of a revolver type. Maybe if you had a revolver, you would suck less. And Ocelot's like, oh my god, freaking Ocelot, meow, like meowing. For his freaking something, the way like Sokolov grew operatives. Oh yeah. By the way, your Russian is superb. Where did you learn to speak it? I always wished he would say, what are you talking about? We're not speaking Russian at all. It's like, what'd you call it? Our tank doesn't need a rocket engine. It needs something else. Look at these. Nice shoes. No, these. Legs. Legs to walk around with. And later, Sigan's like, god damn, that guy was so fucking drunk. Legs on a tank are so fucking stupid. No one's ever going to do that. Heard about one guy in the U.S. What was his name? Emerson Heinrich? Whatever the fuck. I don't care. Well, look at that. It ended up getting some lines out anyway. They weren't exact, but whatever. It was still fun.
You found them, though.
Yeah, there was no like freaking 2001 the Space Odyssey like style like code like a kernel AI breakdown going on. So.
No.
Yeah, we didn't get any of that. Secret Theater though, that was like completely insane. Remember after like it was like the director of Central Intelligence, that's the guy who he doesn't shake the hand of.
Yeah.
And the Secret Theater version where he zooms in on his face when he's like he looks completely freaking mad.
Oh yeah.
And instead of being the boss when he lands in for Snake Operation Snake Eater, he meets an angry DCI and he does all the CQC moves and then he's like, what do you want? And he just takes his hand out and it's like finally they shake.
Oh yeah.
And then at the end, everyone's clapping and they're dancing around the flower field and they start making out.
Oh, yeah. God, that was so fucking weird.
That was the one that ended with Metal Gear Stupid. And then Rykov was like, just a speedo getting run over by the Shaggy.
Oh, yeah. That was the Metal Gear Stupid one. Yeah, I still liked the one where the gun was a lighter. There was one titled The Beginning is the End.
Yeah,
all he did was he just fucked up the timing with getting rid of the parachute, and he just went off the cliff and died just right away.
Yeah. You see this parachute slowly floating.
I mean, I think it would be awesome to somehow just like edit that content back into the game, burn it to a disc, and just have that be like Metal Gear Solid 3. You just say, here's a copy of Metal Gear Solid 3, and the only thing, like, you know, it's the same front end menu, same game, same everything, and you just hit new game, and you see the opening cutscene, and then he, like, homeboy just, like, sails off the fucking cliff, dies, time paradox, game over, back to the main menu.
Oh my god, you remember, like, those anti-piracy measures on games? Like, you know, Earthbound would, like, wipe your save at the final boss battle and stuff?
Yeah.
And it freezes up, it wipes all your saves. if they did a thing where it's like you pirate MGS3 and you load up an ISO and it detects that, and if that happened,
oh yeah,
that would have been so fucking nuts.
That would be fucking rad. I would totally do that.
Like, screw you're making a disc explode inside the system, whatever the heck idea, after you die, Kojima, that should have been what you did.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess they didn't really, I guess the piracy issue was a bit out of hand with PS2, they just didn't bother.
Yeah.
But then, like, it was like you had to go out of your way to do it. It wasn't like a PSP firmware thing, so I guess they also didn't really mind so much.
Yeah, well, you had to, I mean, it took a lot of effort. You had to, you know, you had to put a mod chip in, which was...
Effort, money, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Metal Gear Ride and Snake Eraser.
Oh, God.
The first time he teleports in, like, Terminator.
Yeah, all of those are just fucking bizarre.
He stands up, looks behind him, and it's like, oh, shit. So he gets struck down by Snake when he lands him, touches down.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he gets, like beat up by Volgan in a jail cell.
Yep.
What a beautiful body you have, like a newborn baby. Man, what if Peter Cullen did the voice for Volgan? That would have been insane.
Oh, God. I mean, as he was...
He was pretty great. He sounded like a... Yeah, he sounded like a G.I. Joe villain. But I think... Because the voice actor actually was a G.I. was a voice actor for, like, for a couple of the G.I. Joe characters, I think. Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
A lot of the... Because, you know, voice actors have been working for that long ago. So, a lot of the guys... A couple of guys actually were G.I. Joe veterans, I think. G.I. Joe veterans. I guess that's about all the time we have for recording. So, thanks again. Thanks again, George, for talking about Metal Gear.
No worries, man. Talking about Metal Gear Solid. Sweet.
Yes, and hopefully next time we'll have more people on the second and third and fourth chairs will be filled. Hopefully.
Right on.
To finally talk about Metal Gear Solid 4 and all that entails. I don't think I will record unless we get everyone together for that one. Definitely.
That's going to need an angry Greek chorus.
Man, everyone's gonna have to tell their story of how MGS4 like disappointed them or something like that.
I'll do it first.
Just a round table discussion. Go for it.
Yeah. Oh, and by the time this episode comes out, I know more certainly will have started. I am ashamed to say, well, not ashamed. In some level, I am ashamed to say that I made a profile to attempt to get on the season 3 of The Tester on the PlayStation Network.
Oh, right on.
And I need help if anyone out there is listening. And yeah, I would love for you to make a voter profile to, like, just comment on my blog, the blogs that I put up, the profile, like the video that I got there. And please vote for me when the time comes, whenever you get a chance. Like, please make a... I am pleading on the air. Please make a photo profile. Tell your friends, your family, your coworkers, everyone to help me out here.
Right on. Do it up. Get on that show.
Yeah. Because season 3, like, they're saying, like, the stakes are higher. And, like, season 3, they're actually offering out, like, a Q&A position. They're offering, like... It's vaguely labeled a production job. It's a Santa Monica studio. But,
Oh, right on.
But it sounds big enough that I'm like, okay... Yeah, I want to get on that. And once again, thank you for listening. Thanks, everyone, for talking. Yeah, thank you. Thank me. And I think I'll close it out with this thing I forgot to do. Like, I remembered while we were recording, I meant to do this a bit with my Peter Cullen impression again.
After the end of World War II, the world was split into two, East and West. This marked the beginning of the era called the Cold War.
Yeah. I meant for that to be towards the beginning when we started the MGS3 talk, but whatever. And, see you guys, hope you keep listening, just give us your Twitter.
On Twitter, I'm at GKokoris, GKokoris.
And I'm at Shinogu, Shinogu. And you can also find me on thetester.com as casting.thetester.com/Shinogu. Same spelling.
Awesome.
And that's that. Thanks for listening.
Later.
And that's it. Did you hear all that?
I did. It's funny actually. Now that I'm hearing it, I don't know how it's. You're not infiltrating enemy territory. You are infiltrating the enemy. Like, you are. What is this like stealth butt sex or something? I don't know. Fucking. I mean, I always knew that Big Boss was a kinky motherfucker, but damn.
Yeah, if the other two are here as planned, I would have done a dramatic reading of Snake Eater's lyrics as Dinobot from Beast Wars.
Oh, God.
I'll give you a little bit of that just to see what everyone missed. What a thrill! With darkness and silence through the night. What a thrill! I'm searching and melting into you. Talk about Big Boss being a kinky motherfucker.
Jesus. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some days you feed on a tree frog.
Some day you feed on a tree frog. Yeah. Don't know about Beast Wars is awesome. Anyway.